Thank you, Nick. Well, I'll see. I'll check my diary, shall I? I'll check my schedule. I did just check, actually, what happened to my late grandmother's pubs in Leeds, one of which has been knocked down, and the other of which recently turned into something called a Hickory's Smokehouse, which is not a chain I'm familiar with, but it speaks, doesn't it, to a decline in the trade that was underway and pretty speedy long before Rachel Reeves set her sights upon those business rates. And now there's another U-turn, and it's the U-turn element, I think, rather than the pub element that interests me most this morning. At some point, U-turns look good. It makes it look like you're listening, that you're changing when the facts change. But there comes a point where there's just too many, right?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Storm Goretti has left tens of thousands of homes without power after bringing heavy snowfall and powerful winds. The National Grid says more than 60,000 properties are currently without electricity in England and Wales. Wind gusts of 99 miles per hour have been recorded in Cornwall, with falling trees also causing issues on the roads. Darren Clark is from National Highways and has this advice for those looking to travel.
Drive cautiously, drive slow, consider it's going to take you a lot longer to stop. No sudden actions when you're braking or turning or accelerating. And if you don't need to make that journey, stay at home, stay safe.
Dozens of schools are closed in northern Scotland and central Wales due to heavy snowfall. Transport for Wales says it won't run services on most of its routes today. Judith Bryce is from the Welsh Ambulance Service and has told LBC they're expecting a sharp rise in demand.
It does mean in areas like remote parts of Wales that it may take us longer to reach you. But what we would say is that please, if you need us, continue to call and we will be there. Only go out if you have to. You know, conditions are going to be quite significant out there.
Stay with LBC for the latest on Storm Goretti. Elsewhere this morning, two people have been taken to hospital after being shot by a US federal agent in the state of Oregon. It happened during a vehicle stop targeting a passenger linked to a suspected Venezuelan gang. Portland's Democratic mayor has called for immigration agents to suspend all operations in the city while investigations take place. A potential U-turn on planned business rate hikes for pubs is being called totally unfair by some within the hospitality sector. LBC understands an announcement's expected within days, but it won't apply to other firms or retailers. It's the latest in a series of government climb-downs, including on farmers' inheritance tax before Christmas. The Labour Party chair, Anna Turley, told LBC any change for pubs won't be a U-turn.
Policies change all the time. You know, I don't see every shift in a policy. We can spend the next 3 years calling every shift or slight amendment in a policy a U-turn. I don't think that's fair. Okay. The reality is we have to make sure that we get things right for people, and we always keep our policies under evaluation.
And the social media platform X says it's changed its AI system for generating images for the majority of users. There's been widespread criticism of the chatbot Grok for its use to create deep fake pictures of women and girls. A post on X says the service has now been limited to subscribers. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 36 at 10,079. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, Storm Goretti will slowly move eastwards. Snow showers will linger, though, for the east of England. Sunny spells and wintry showers elsewhere. A high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling. And smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go. In a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 10 is the time. Very good morning indeed to you. It's a funny one, isn't it? I'm going to start talking today about pubs. I think the whole show today will look largely at domestic situations, although I'm keen to catch up with Simon Marks about the events in Minneapolis. We went in so deep on those yesterday, and nothing really has changed. The liars continue to lie, and the horror of what happened continues to reverberate around. I wonder whether people ask themselves the question, what will I do when they start murdering innocent people and blatantly lying about it? What will I do when they start killing innocent people and blatantly lying about it? You know, sadly, we live in a world where for some people it's going to depend upon characteristics. You know, when George Floyd was murdered and it was blatantly lied about, some people felt that his criminal record or his ethnicity or his history justified the murder, as if the law is not universal, as if it doesn't apply to everybody. In the case of Renee Nicole Good, it's a little harder to do that. So people who have asked themselves the question, how will I react? What will I do? Journalists, perhaps, how will I report when they start killing innocent people and blatantly lying about it? I suspect a lot of people are very surprised to find what their real answer to that question is on both sides of the Atlantic. I bet they never thought a month ago, a year ago, 10 years ago, that they'd be, well, I'll probably defend it, or I'll both sides it, or I'll try to turn it into something that is debatable, or I'll completely ignore it because I've been such a passionate supporter of Donald Trump. I've used the phrase Trump derangement syndrome to describe people accurately reporting on who and what he is, what he does, and the threats that he poses. So I'll probably just not mention it at all. I don't know. I honestly don't know, but it's an interesting question, isn't it? What will I do when they start murdering innocent people, murdering civilians, and blatantly lying about it? Because I still find it impossible to believe that we are actually there. We are actually there. It's happened. Not here yet, thank goodness. Hopefully never, but there. It's happened there. And don't at me. Of course it has happened here in some ways, particularly if you're looking at the history of the Troubles in Northern Ireland. And then you have that other story, which involves looking across the Atlantic. But I think given that so many people here are still on that platform, it does count as a domestic story. I can't get my head around it. Sometimes I come on air and say to you, we're doing a Marvin Gaye. A what's going on topic. Like, I literally just, or come one, come all, and explain to me what is going on. But Twitter, which, I mean, when I first joined Twitter, it was a lovely, warm, fluffy, funny place. And now, it's the place that you go to, and I'm going to say this, in a sense, with an air of disbelief. It's a place that you go to if you want to make child sex abuse images for fun. But pardon? And the owner seems entirely comfortable with that. The changes that they've made, reported in our news bulletin, now limit the freedom to make child sex abuse images to your heart's content to people who pay to be on the platform. You can no longer do it if you don't pay. Although you can still, if you don't pay, make all manner of hideous and probably illegal images. So I don't know how we get into that at 11 o'clock. Sometimes when I say we're going to crowdsource, I want you to text me or WhatsApp me with ideas of how we talk about it. If you can frame it in a sentence or two, ideally interrogatory, ideally questions, I might just nick it and give you a producer credit at the end of the program, because we're not quite sure how to get into this as a subject. Hey, we could book a bunch of experts. We've already spoken to a bloke who knows this story inside out this week. We did that on Wednesday. But how does it work in a conversation that we can have together? What's that word that we used earlier in the week to describe something that you can't quite believe even as it unfolds in front of you? Twitter has been turned into a place. Sorry, say that again, James. Yeah, you go there now and you can turn pictures of any woman on the planet into basic pornography. Well, sophisticated pornography, utterly convincing pornography. Do you know what they've done? They've taken pictures of a young woman who died in that hideous fire in Switzerland over the Christmas period, a 15-year-old girl who was educated in this country, and instructed the app to put her in a bikini. And within minutes of Renee Nicole Good being killed yesterday, they were doing the same to pictures of her. And I can't, you can tell from my voice, I'm not a prude by any stretch of the imagination. I suppose I'm a child of my upbringing a bit, but I can't quite believe what I'm saying to you. And when I can't quite believe what I'm saying to you, I struggle sometimes to come up with a way into the conversation. But we'll try, I think, at 11, and we'll do something a little bit lighter at 12. But here we are, pubs and U-turns. I'll read you something interesting from Chris. It's a very honest and it's quite a plaintive text. I was so full of hope when Labour won the general election. But after having had many years to prepare, why are they so bad at government? I'm just so confused and disappointed. I understand that things take time to redirect the country or get results, but they seem to be so awful at communication and make poorly thought out decisions. Please help me understand why these intelligent people cannot seem to get it together. And then on the other hand, Henry makes this point. I beg your pardon. Henry's telling me why I should get myself down to Hickory Smokehouse at the first opportunity, which is what my grandma's old pub has been turned into up in Leeds. But Patrick writes, the media and public demand change. Please change the policy. Please perform a U-turn. So the government performs a U-turn and the media and the public start hollering, not like that. Not like that, or too little, too late, or not enough. He's got a point, hasn't he? And if it were one or two U-turns, if it were one or two policies that are quite significant and are defended, and the point you have here, and I will be mindful of the fact that Starmer's challenge, the government's challenge, is epic, and much of it is caused by the people who can't wait to start hurling abuse at him the minute he gets into Downing Street. I'm not going to stop hitting these marks on a daily basis, but you're talking about austerity, you're talking about Brexit, you're talking about Boris Johnson, you're talking about Liz Truss. All of those things were inflicted on the country by a combination of wealth and right-wing media and increasingly far-right rhetoric. So the idea that he can undo all the damage done by those four or five things in a year is ridiculous. I'm not part of that crew. But you do have the plain observation that if I was being sent out to defend something and explain why it was necessary by my boss, and then, I mean, they abandon it. They U-turn. I, as a key member of that team, would be disillusioned and dissatisfied. So how the heck can you criticise voters like Chris for just wondering what on earth is going on? What on earth is going on? Over the Christmas period, the inheritance tax on farmers was reduced, the threshold was raised, which in a way that would remove most family farms from it. Because the big defence of that was always, it's not family farms that are going to be affected, it's the people who use special dispensations given to farms in order to avoid tax. So, I think Dyson, the Hoover bloke, is one of them who's bought shed loads of farmland because it is much cheaper to hand it on to the next generation under the previous rules than almost any other asset that you can hold in this country. I presume he'll still be on the hook for that because I presume he's got more than £2.5 million worth of farmland. But that was the idea. That was how you defended it by saying, no, it's not Farmer Barley Mow. It's a little bod nod there for you. It's not Farmer Barley Mow who's going to be affected by this. It's the big multi sort of, it's the corporations or it's the individuals who are using purchases of land to avoid inheritance tax that would be due on pretty much any other asset they could hold. But you defended it on those grounds and then they do a U-turn which acknowledges that that's not what it was doing at all. You've got the, I don't know if the two child benefit cap counts as a U-turn because most people who were supportive of this government probably wanted it. But Sir Keir vowed that he would not ditch the cap. And then he did. It was announced at the last budget that it would be scrapped. So there's that famous line that John Maynard Keynes probably never said, but it has gone down in history anyway. When the facts change, sir, I change my mind. What do you do? And that's a brilliant line. It makes a mockery of that Thatcherite mantra about the ladies not for turning. You turn if you want to, the ladies not for turning. What if you're driving towards a cliff, madam? You turn if you want to, the ladies not for turning. Yes, you're driving towards a cliff.
The clouds have cleared on the road that you're travelling down, and it turns out that you're actually heading towards a cliff at 80 miles an hour. Are you going to do a U-turn? The lady's not for turning. No, you're driving towards a cliff, Mrs. Thatcher. So you can see that that's a stupid thing, not only to say, but also to fetishise politically, which we've done in this country for three or four decades. But the problem with these U-turns is that the facts haven't changed. The facts haven't changed. The scenario in which Sir Keir Starmer promised not to ditch the benefit cap is the same scenario in which he ditched it. The context in which the Labour government introduced inheritance tax on farms worth more than £1 million, farming estates worth more than £1 million, is exactly the same context as the one in which they reversed it to a threshold of £2.5 million. You know that the national insurance rises as a promise they wouldn't increase, and they increase. You probably get that one as the facts changing. So some of the U-turns were built upon the discovery of just how bad things had been at the end of 14 years of Tory rule. And I can be sympathetic to that. You look, let's be honest, you'd have to be absolutely bent to pretend that they didn't inherit an almighty mess caused largely. I mean, look, this is a party that put Boris Johnson in charge. This is a country that made him Prime Minister. So in many ways, in a Catholic with a large C sense, this is self-flagellation. This is penance. We deserve to be punished for our stupidity. I haven't even mentioned the fact that we were persuaded to vote for Brexit by exactly the same people that persuaded us to vote for Boris Johnson. But you have a lot of evidence, don't you, of the facts not changing, but the government changing their policy. So I think we will, what's the word that I want? I think that we will address Chris's question directly this morning, as well as looking at the bigger picture. So to address Chris's question directly, why are they apparently so bad at this? I've got a couple of answers to that question myself, 0345 60 60 973. And I just want you to tell me, in the first instance, what do you think of the U-turn? What do you think of this U-turn? There's a temptation to do a topic on whether or not pubs are dying an inevitable slow death. Will they all be Hickory's smokehouses eventually? I never knew my grandma, my dad's mum. I never had the pleasure of knowing her. But she was a landlady, a Leeds landlady of some repute. And I think it was called the Lawnswood Arms. You'll know if you're in that part of Yorkshire better than I will. And it is now a Hickory smokehouse, I think relatively recently, because we went to it about 10 years ago, and it was still a pub then. And she had a place in the centre of Leeds called the Market Tavern, which was notoriously rough. And that's just not there at all. That's been redeveloped and knocked down. So, and I subscribe, because I'm weird, to websites about ghost pubs and pubs that are no longer there. There's websites where you can track the history of pubs. I'm fascinated by how many there used to be and how small they used to be in some parts of the country. You had basically tap rooms where it would be someone's front room. Had a bit of homebrew out the back, and you'd have eight people sitting, neighbours just coming round to buy a pie. It's just an intrinsic part of our society, but so was sending children up chimneys. It might just be one of those things that is petering out for a variety of reasons. And that is an interesting conversation. We may move on to that this hour, but I want to begin with the politics of it, with your permission. Rachel Reeves has avoided another damaging rebellion against her economic policies with the promise of a U-turn on controversial tax rises for pubs in England. I think Tom Kerridge probably focused a lot of minds on how ludicrous this was when he described the scale of the increase he would face on his pub in Marlow in Buckinghamshire, a really lovely pub, actually, as you'd expect from a legend like Tom Kerridge. But whether they were the right thing to do or not, what do we think about this? Is it a sign of weakness or a sign of listening? And where's the threshold for you? Can you make a case for saying that this isn't something we should be criticising? They're new, they've been out of power for 14 years, they've come in, they've made a bunch of announcements in good faith, and then they have realised that they were wrong. There's a great line, isn't there, in the construction industry. Measure twice, cut once. So they measured once, made an announcement, and then measured again and realised the announcement was wrong. So they've measured twice and they're only going to cut once. So are U-turns a sign of weakness or a sign of listening? And does this government at this time deserve any credit whatsoever for changing course when the course is so unpopular? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. Because you want government that listens to people, right? But you want government that listens to people probably before it makes massive announcements. That's just the bit I'm really struggling with. You want to pay attention before you make a massive announcement. You want to do your homework before you hand it in. You want to do your research before you reach your conclusions. You announce your conclusions, and then further research leads you to renounce. You move from announce to renounce in a heartbeat. And this government seems to almost be defined by big announcements and then slow reversals. What's going on? Why do you think it's happening? 0345 6060 973. And hand on heart, what is your opinion of the U-turns in general and this U-turn in particular? Hit the numbers now. You will get through. It's 20 minutes after 10.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved. You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
It's another day at Screwfix, and so Mo Farah is still getting to grips with things.
So, Mo, with Sprint Delivery, we get the order to them in as little as 20 minutes. Mo?
Mo?
Done. He was on the 18th floor.
Nice work. But, you know we use delivery riders, right?
Oh, now you tell me.
Sprint it in as little as 20 minutes. Screwfix. No stopping you. Conditions and geographical restrictions apply.
Craig's never shown an interest in beekeeping before, but that's the sound of him buying 2,000 worker bees rather than doing his self-assessment. Craig, you live in a sixth-floor flat. The deadline is 31st of January. Less distraction, more action.
Don't be like Craig. Visit gov.uk/self-assessment today. Payment support may be available.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 21 minutes after 10. Have a little listen to Anna Turley, the Labour Chair, MP for Redcar, who was talking to Nick earlier today about this perceived U-turn. When is a U-turn not a U-turn? Well, Anna Turley had an attempt at answering that question earlier.
So telling the sector their business rates are going to rise and then telling them they're not, that's not a U-turn in your book?
Their business rates are independently valued, so that was going to happen as a result of coming out of COVID, plus the relief that we put in place for COVID was going to come to an end. So and we've moved a lot in the budget to try and support them through this process. If more needs to be done, we'll look at that, and we keep every policy under review, and it's a sign of a confident government that is willing to listen to the public, take the right decisions, and not just plough on ideologically.
Well, let's
but
ask.
To make sure
yes.
right.
Okay, I don't know, I'm about to ask my listeners, but you lastly then, you will say a government that's committed or performed 11 U-turns is a government that's in a position of power and strength, is it, Minister?
Policies change all the time. You know, I don't see every shift in a policy. We can spend the next 3 years calling every shift or slight amendment in a policy a U-turn. I don't think that's fair. Okay. The reality is we have to make sure that we get things right for people, and we always keep our policies under evaluation.
The 11 U-turns figure comes from the Daily Mail today, and it's not really fair or accurate, but there are certainly more U-turns than you should be comfortable with. As Paul in Skelmersdale puts it, I'm a big fan of Labour, and their mistakes, though frustrating, are mistakes. U-turns aren't always weakness. In fact, quite the opposite. And then, just like Ian in Liverpool, he quotes one of my favourite lines back at me. What is the point of having a mind if you never change it? As Ian suggests, a wise man once said. It wasn't me. I thought I'd come up with that. It turns out it was actually Edward de Bono, he was a philosopher before he founded U2. That's my favourite dad joke, and no one else ever laughs at it, but I'm never going to surrender. As with all the best dad jokes, you should never step away from it. You should never step down. But the idea that there is no point having a mind if you never change it is a defence of so-called U-turns. I'd add to that, there's no point having convictions. There's no point having policies if you never stick to them, is there? So there's a fascinating tension here. There's a balance between wanting governments that acknowledge mistakes, that listen to criticism, listen to the people likely to be most affected by a policy, and a government that ploughs on regardless. For example, the poll tax, probably the finest example of why being psychologically and politically incapable of U-turning is politically ridiculous. It did for Margaret Thatcher. But where do you put the line between healthy listening and mind-changing and weakness and flip-flopping? Ryan is in Scarborough, not a million miles away from my grandma's old pub. Ryan, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Yeah, I've got a cafe and I've got a pub in Scarborough, and I believe it's quite an easy U-turn, really, and I think they should have listened a lot earlier to UK hospitality and all the pub companies, because in pubs are done on turnover, and my cafe is done on floor space. So, you know, you could have a pub making a lot of turnover because they're open a lot more. But as we know, turnover is just turnover.
It's not,
you know,
it's not so profit. So, I mean, I always think of corner shops, and I often wonder how a family-run corner shop, how much each individual member of that family is actually getting paid on an hourly rate when they're open for sort of 20 hours a day, and those customers are dribbling in and dribbling out. That's a really good point. I didn't understand that. And that's always been the way. Cafes and pubs have always had their rates judged differently, set differently.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, your cafes, you pay, you know, in a pub you get an offset on your VAT because alcohol has VAT, whereas in a cafe everything's VAT-able. So there's a lot of pros and cons to each business, and it's quite, you know, I'm like in a position to understand the difference. Well, you might get a cafe owner kicking off, why aren't you reducing my rate of value? But a pub landlord could be open 7 days a week. They're providing a service. They're open. They make very little profit. Pubs make very little profit. So the cafes, actually, they're, you know, it's not.
So
what
you're almost
think.
You're almost getting punished for trying to stay afloat. The way the imbalance works in measuring the two businesses.
That's it. So I'll give you an example.
Yeah,
if a pub's done £500,000 turnover, then in this revaluation, suddenly it's doing £1 million turnover. Its rateable value might go up 100,000, but it's not making any more money because the rateable value is based on turnover.
Yes, not profit. How were you going to be hit? Did you do this? I presume you did the sums as a businessman.
I mean, I'm not actually going to be hit at the pub. It's actually gone down a couple of thousand, but the pub up the road's doing more turnover since the revaluation. That's going up to 52,000 a year.
From what?
From 30,000,
yeah,
and mine's gone down 2,000.
Just explain to an idiot, and that is me, Ryan. I am the idiot here. I'm not playing.
Okay.
Let me be clear. I'm not playing the part of the idiot. I am actually the idiot. But just explain to an idiot why yours is going down.
Mine's going down basically, probably for no reason at all, other than I'm doing a bit less turnover.
Okay.
But the rateable value is on a multiplier for pubs which have reduced, so you got a 40% rebate. Now, what they did is they've moved the multiplier down, so effectively I'm paying the same as last year. Or, you know, so you kind of say on a pub multiplier, if your rateable value is, say, 90,000, you would pay 30,000 payable.
They're not, so the more I listen to people like you, the more I think they're not really U-turns, these. They're tweaks and developments, evolutions and adjustments. Some of them, not all of them. But, they don't have control over how they reach the public. Politically, because you began by saying they should have done it sooner and they should have done this and they should have done that. But do they get any credit from you at all for doing it at all? For not going full poll tax and pressing on regardless?
Yeah, I think, on this issue, I'm not benefiting from it. In fact, the cafe, they took out of rateable value.
Right.
So in my instance, they've had to help me, and I think the people shouting the loudest are the people. For instance, there's a little country pub in Scarborough. Its rateable value was probably about 30,000. It's doing a lot of food,
yeah,
a lot of beer. Its turnover's gone to 1 million, and suddenly they want 132,000 rateable. So they will be paying about, I don't know, do a third of that, 45,000 type area.
So it was a blunt instrument, in it. Are you describing by any chance the Three Jolly Sailors?
No, it's a place called the Farrier.
Okay. It was a blunt instrument then, and they've sharpened it. They've made it a fairer process.
Yeah, their argument was we've thrown a lot of money into transitional rate relief. So what happens with that is, I think Tom Kerridge was on Newsnight and he was trying to explain it, that basically transitional rate relief, so they don't initially put you up to that, but it's like a slow death. So when it gets to year number three, you're on the full rate.
Got it. Yes.
I think in this case, it is common sense what they've done with pubs. We've drawn this.
And you lose. So, I mean, yours is the greatest praise of all. Do you want to give your pub a shout out, Ryan?
Yeah,
you're more than welcome
to. It's the Waterhouse Bar in Scarborough. We're open tonight. We've got live music on. It's,
What sort of music?
It's basically live music, so you've got acoustic artists and bands, and, you know, we're mainly open Friday, Saturday night. We've had to adapt a bit, with
that
the opening
sense.
Hours, yes. But it reduces my turnover and my business rates.
I get it now. Actually, that last bit there really made sense to me, is that you open less, and then your turnover comes down, and you're only open at the potentially most profitable times. It won't be an option that's open to every landlord, but it shows that perhaps it is a little bit more complicated than a lot of the coverage allows. And listen, I'm not suggesting for a minute that the government shouldn't have been across how complicated it was, but is there an argument for saying better late than never? In fact, if we were to go full tabloid, thank you, Ryan, this whole conversation is better late than never versus too little too late, isn't it? And the truth probably lies somewhere between the two. But on the bigger question, so I'm fascinated by the pubs question, and we may move on to the question of whether or not the industry is going to survive in anything like its current form. But the bit that is just what you think about the U-turn, what you think about changes. Because I think we want governments that actually reflect and respond to reality, even if they should be criticised for getting it wrong the first time. Or does that make me sound like a victim of footballification, something that I always criticise other people for? I take a lot of convincing that any of the other contenders would do anything other than return the country immediately to the dog days of Brexit, austerity, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, who, of course, Nigel Farage was almost as big a fan of Liz Truss's economic policies as he is of Vladimir Putin's foreign policies. But the danger of defending unduly is real. I just think here, what do you want? You want them to listen and change, or you want them not to listen and change? If you accept that they've done this thing in the first place, what do you want them to do next? 0345 6060 973. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
More than 50,000 properties across the UK are without power following Storm Goretti. Parts of the southwest of England saw winds of 99 miles per hour overnight. The Midlands and Central Wales also saw some heavy snow. Some flights at Birmingham and East Midlands airports have had to be grounded this morning, while trains have also been impacted. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has made a televised address to the nation calling for unity. It follows nearly 2 weeks of protests across the country. And the social media firm X has switched off an image editing function for the vast majority of its users. It's after increasing political pressure to stop people using the Grok AI tool to digitally undress women and girls. LBC weather. Storm Goretti will slowly move eastwards. Snow showers will linger across the east of England. Sunny spells and wintry showers elsewhere. A high of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Hi, James. Right, it's Colin. I just had to get in Retford, who is probably not going to hear this because he tells me he's just getting back into the shower at the end of his message. I just had to get out of the shower to type this and make the point that these are not U-turns. They are adjustments. How many of that Daily Mail 11 have been completely reversed? I'd guess zero or one at a push. You're right, actually. The family farm tax is an adjustment. The employment rights bill is an adjustment, if you like, a watering down. I think the two-child benefit cap probably counts as a U-turn. We will not ditch it. Yes, we will. The problem is, in political terms, a U-turn just means a change of course. Obviously, in motoring terms, and we don't do motoring topics on this programme, as you know, a U-turn means a complete reversal of direction. It's a 180-degree change. So you're right, Colin, but you're probably sounding a little bit Malcolm Tucker or a little bit Bird and Fortune on this, which is showing my age a bit as a cultural reference, isn't it? So let's carry on through the list. Increase in income tax, that's not a U-turn. It was hinted at in November of last year on the 4th. This is how desperate they are to portray U-turns. Increase in income tax hinted at on November the 4th and then confirmed it wouldn't be happening on November the 13th. So that's one of your U-turns. That proves Colin's point rather gloriously. The welfare reforms, this was the £5 billion quid that was supposed to be saved, and then you had a backbench rebellion. I think that's probably a U-turn. No more tax rises. I think that's a technicality and a semantic, isn't it? The freezing of income tax thresholds. The Green Pledge, not really. I go back to September of 2021, long before they were in power. I think to be a U-turn, it has to be something that has happened while they were in power. The grooming gangs thing, I mean, we'll wait and see what happens there, but of course, the successive inquiries that haven't had their recommendations enacted perhaps explain why there was an initial reluctance to have yet another one there. The winter fuel payments, that probably counts as a U-turn. That was supposed to be restricted to those on bonus. So that was a U-turn. Probably the only one, really. Only two. The rest would be adjustments. And does that make you feel more warmly towards this lot or more negatively? Jamie suggests that a left-hand turn at a tricky corner is not a U-turn. Or even a right-hand turn, mate, at a tricky corner is not a U-turn either. 10:37 is the time. I've had a message from one of my favourite landlords of one of my favourite pubs, which I will share with you shortly, but not until we've heard from Norman, who's in Epsom. Norman, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. Again, the more I hear about this, the more I feel sorry for Rachel Reeves, because... Yeah, we're the first country in the world to impose economic sanctions on itself.
That's a very good line. I shall be using that in the future, Norman. Thank you very much.
And we have no money. And yeah. She's desperate to find any proposal from the Treasury that raises revenue. And she's grabbing at it. What they don't seem to be doing, well, there's two things they're not doing. One, they're not doing the quality control check. And in manufacturing and in industry, we talk about getting it right first time. That to actually make these changes, to go back and change products that you've introduced, costs you more money. So you want to get it right the first time. So they don't seem to have a quality control process. And whatever process they have isn't rooted in any politics.
Or ideology, actually.
Or ideology.
That's the mad thing, isn't it, that is becoming increasingly harder to argue with. That they don't. No one knows what they believe in.
Yeah, they have no belief to say, we're not going there, or we're not going here, because this is what we believe, and this is where we're going. So Osborne can turn around to the Treasury, as he did, and he says, well, we're not going to introduce this tax because we believe in a smaller state. Whereas Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer, they seem to be almost accepting proposals from the Treasury because we're in a deep hole, and they need to find the revenue because we've cut off our nose to spite our face with Brexit. So,
have you ever had food delivered and realised at the last minute that you may not have enough cash to pay for it? And you run around the house like a mad thing, right? You go, sort of shake old the bottles where you used to keep 5p's. You maybe even start eyeing up the kids' piggy bank. You're checking the drawer, the back of the sofa. You're just searching for money. You've got to find some money because the doorbell's about to go, and you're 4 quid under for your pizza.
Yeah.
I grant you, this isn't a modern event because everything's ordered online these days. But I remember those days, and that's what the government is like. And every time they find some money and announce that they found some money, oh, we're going to find some money, then, you know, the sofa's object. And they have to say, oh, actually,
no. That money belongs to someone else.
We're going to have to put that back. We're going to have to put that money back.
And there's another problem, James, with the whole budget process, that typically with policy introductions, they go through consultation processes and so on with NGOs. But with the budget, it's all done in secret.
Yeah.
And they can't really go and consult with people to give hints as to... I mean, they try to do that a little bit this time, but this whole process, and I think Sam Friedman in his book Failed State really goes into a lot of detail.
It's a brilliant
this
book.
It's a really good... This whole budget, it's all about performance. It's not really a serious exercise anymore in real financial management. It's about performance and pulling rabbits out of hats and all kinds of things he talks about. So the budget process in itself seems to be creating problems that where if we didn't have this once a year performance, we could actually do things in a more considered way.
This is nuanced. There's not much room for nuance in political commentary in this country. Obviously we manage, but generally speaking, it's either too little too late or it's better late than never. But you're doing both, aren't you? You are critiquing the operational processes of politics in general in this country. But this government deserves particular criticism for not having a clearer idea of what its announcements would do or what the reaction would be in the economy, not just in the sector from the people, but from the numbers. And yet at the same time, it has to be preferable to make these adjustments as opposed to not making them.
I think, James, the problem that Labour faces is that the majority, 95% of the media is against them.
Yes.
And so if it was the Conservatives, they would get the benefit of the doubt for making an adjustment. But because it's Labour, they're going to get buried for making an adjustment.
Well, speaking as someone who leans much more towards the Labour tradition than the Conservative tradition, I would give the Conservatives the benefit of the doubt for making an adjustment. You'd be like, you might be like, why did it have to come to this? Why did we have to wait so long? But thank goodness they've done the right thing in the end. They don't even get that, do they?
They don't get that, and they should understand, again, the politics which they're dealing with, and they really should know if they're real Labour people, is... The press are always going to be against them, so they need clear thinking.
And that's the problem, and that's the frustrating thing for supporters and admirers, is that so much of the damage seems to be self-inflicted. Thank you, Norman. That's brilliant stuff. And Barbara picks up on the point about the winter fuel allowance not being a U-turn. I used to get it, and now I don't. So that's an adjustment as well, but it was a fairly hefty adjustment. It didn't go if it was binary, it goes from 0 to 1 or 1 to 0, right? That's a U-turn. But I don't think you're going to win that argument when it comes to the traditional definition of a U-turn in politics. What I would remind you of is how ridiculous it is to pledge never to make U-turns, because you might find yourself heading at 80 miles per hour towards a metaphorical cliff that you didn't know was there when you set your course that morning, and suddenly you're about to fly off a cliff, but you're going to insist that you don't do U-turns. And to oversimplify things violently, that's pretty much what happened with the poll tax and Margaret Thatcher. A quick word, and then we can expand it if you want to, into what is the problem. Chris's original question at the top of the show about, as someone who was really looking forward to a Labour government and now struggles to understand why they make so many mistakes, the poor comms, the poor decisions. You welcome a reversal, but you'd much rather not need the reversal because you wouldn't have made the poor decision in the first place. Have I shared my theory with you? I came up with this over Christmas, and I was with someone who really knows his onions, politically speaking. I'm not going to embarrass them by telling you who that was or what their qualifications are, but it's somebody who knows about winning elections, right? Not necessarily in this country, but they know about winning elections. And I cautiously, because they're much cleverer than me, I cautiously suggested that the problem is actually loyally, with a W, not loyally as in loyalty, but loyally as in lawyers. And that Keir Starmer, what many people find very confusing about Keir Starmer is that there is no project. There is no ideology. They obsess about messaging, but they don't know what they're selling. It's as if you had 90% of your budget going on slogans and advertising campaigns without spending anything on the product. What is the product that they are selling? And I was trying to work this out. I was trying to think, how has that happened? How has it become all about the battle, as it were, rather than the substance? And I think it's to do with lawyering, with being a lawyer. I think that when you're a lawyer, you are handed a brief, and your job is not to quibble or question the guilt or the innocence of your client. You are told what your job is. Your job is to either prosecute or defend. And so I found myself thinking about this during immigration conversations, and a lot of people, like me, very surprised to find a Labour government sounding at times as if it's slightly to the right of Genghis Khan. Never mind Nigel Farage. And yet, if you are a lawyer and your job is to prosecute or defend, and you have concluded or been told that the public, the electorate, has a problem with immigration, you do not think it is your job to explain to the electorate why they should not have a problem with immigration. You do not think it is your job to reach for statistics, because your job is to prosecute the case. And the case you've been given, your client, is an electorate concerned about immigration. All the polling shows that it is a concern. It goes up and down, but it's generally a concern. So Keir Starmer sees his job as giving the client what the client wants, and the client wants to be less concerned about immigration. So they're going to reduce immigration, quite possibly this year, to net zero. And every single consequence of that will be bad, but the client will have been well served. It's not perfect, but if you're searching for an explanation for the absence of ideology and an obsession with messaging when nobody knows what it is they're actually selling, and this is going to sound even more arrogant than usual, I think you'll struggle to come up at the moment with a better explanation than that. But feel free to try on 0345 6060973. Why do they appear to be disappointing so many people? And what do we think about the so-called U-turns that are almost always more accurately describable as adjustments, but just keep happening? We ended with one last year on the farms, and we've began with one this year on the pubs. That can't be a good thing. However loyal you are, however tightly your scarf is knotted around your neck, your bright red Labour scarf, you cannot be arguing this is a good thing, and you can't really defend it. But I'd love you to try.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. At the budget, Rachel Reeves said business rates would be coming down. It is genuinely hard to tell whether that was large-scale, rampant incompetence or flat-out lying. Today, with the threat of publicans descending on London, Rachel Reeves has signalled she will U-turn on business rate changes for pubs. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, electric cars will now be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No, no medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6 month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the biggest Furniture Village sale of the year. Save even more on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. But hurry, Early Bird offers end this Sunday at Furniture Village, a world-class family business.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It's 10 to 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It is inevitably rather more complicated than most of the headlines allow. The reasons why pubs were facing this hefty hit was at least threefold. The reductions in COVID-era reliefs. So, I mean, the socialist policy, essentially, that Rishi Sunak brought in, or Boris Johnson brought in, I forget which, to give money to companies simply to keep them afloat, that obviously gets reduced now that COVID is no longer causing temporary closures. Then you have the three-yearly revaluation, which kicks in April of 2026. Which you should have seen coming. Everybody knew it was coming, but it nonetheless leads to big increases, exacerbated by the other thing, and that meant that the reduction in headline rates, which was announced in the budget, when Rachel Rees claimed that 750,000 businesses would see their lowest tax rate since 1991. While true, it gets wiped out by that double whammy of a reduction in COVID-era reliefs and the impact of a three-yearly revaluation. Now, in a completely honest universe, that would be, or rather in a Tory universe, if the right-wing media were consistent and honest, they would simply say things, well, you know, get on your bike. If you can't afford to keep your pub open, maybe you should cancel your Netflix subscription and have a few fewer avocados. You know, people they don't like can't afford things. There's no such thing as poverty, but we need to get the smallest violins in the world out for parents who are required to pay VAT on their school fees. I'm not of that ilk, by the way. I try to be honest and fair in my opinions. I'm almost certainly fail, but you have to at least try. It's not right. You should have state intervention. I like pubs. I always think of hedges in Switzerland. Do you know why I think of hedges in Switzerland? Probably not even true, but when I was a schoolboy, a geography teacher told me that in Switzerland, farmers are paid money to keep hedges. They could make more money by ripping all the hedges out, and then their big tractors could drive right over the land without any impediment, and they could do things quicker and have more crops. But hedges are nice. They make the community look nice. They add to the general picturesque nature of the landscape, and therefore farmers get paid by the government to keep hedges. I like the idea of government spending money and having policies that are motivated by things other than profit. And pubs are a good thing for communities. I love pubs. So I don't think they should just live and die by free market values, as everybody on Tufton Street would be arguing today if they were vaguely honest, which of course they're not. But I do wonder whether this particular U-turn is proof of something deeper, a deeper malaise in this government. I've stopped saying avocado pears, Roddy. You're quite right. I finally arrived in 1983 when it comes to my description of that particularly delicious food stuff. And speaking of particularly delicious food, a quick word from our sponsors. No, that's a joke. He's not our sponsors. He's a landlord of one of my favourite pubs. This is from Angus. 25 years service, been in hospitality all my working life. It's not particularly on the topic that we're discussing. He's probably down in the cellar at the moment without the radio. But please don't forget, as a manager owned and run by Fullers, who've already had to sell their own family brewery to a conglomerate, as there is no money in brewing beer anymore on that sort of scale, now they, stroke we, just run the pub arm of the business. They soak up all the pressures that private landlords face and don't get the recognition they deserve. Over 450 pubs open and afloat. I love my pub, so do I. Hospitality is in my blood, my pub is my life, and my pub is the life of a lot of others. So please, a big shout out to the larger pub operators like mine. They're not all good, but Fuller's is very much a force for good, for allowing us to do what we do. They may be working for shareholders, but they are also keeping these lifeblood establishments open. Just do pop in soon. I will. And that's the point I was trying to make, is that there has to be a balance between serving the shareholders and serving the society. And pubs are a really good example of that. And that maybe defends Labour a little bit on this adjustment or U-turn, whatever you prefer to call it. And in case you're wondering, that pub is the Red Lion in Barnes. Very good rugby pub, actually, if that's your thing. But also a lovely pub on non-rugby days. Malcolm is in Anglesey. Malcolm, what would you like to say?
James, morning. Nice to speak to you. I'm calling as a very, very frustrated Labour supporter.
Yes.
The situation, I've had quite a long career in hospitality, both at a sort of PLC board level, and I've run my own businesses. This reflects, I think, a general concern I've got with Labour's economic policy. We got in partly on the basis that we said we are going to make some fundamental impact on fiscal policy. And business rates was an element of that. The situation with pubs that isn't getting a lot of coverage is that pubs are the only sector where the business rates are set based on the turnover of the business, not the physical size of it.
Yes.
So if you run a successful pub and you put your turnover up, when it gets to the next revaluation, you are literally penalised for growing your business.
Yeah, I did point this out with the first call. I'm not being defensive. I'm just saying it to me. That was a revelation. So you're right to suggest that it is not.
A while ago, we had a restaurant, and the valuation office agency, who are a complete law unto themselves, decided that it wasn't a restaurant; it was a pub.
Right.
And the rates, the business rates trebled, and the appeal process took 4 years.
Good Lord.
Now,
couldn't I have gone in there and just had a pint without ordering any food whatsoever?
Yes, you could.
Oh, that's an interesting, it's almost a phone in this. When does a pub become a restaurant? When is a restaurant?
Well, exactly, but the business was actually called something restaurant.
Fair enough. And, yeah, but it says Dan's, as my late father used to say, it says OMO on the side of buses, Malcolm. It doesn't mean they sell it inside.
Well, that's very true. But for example, if you look at businesses, I hate the word gastropub, but if you look at some food orientated businesses that are, anybody would describe them as a pub.
It's a really important point. You're absolutely right. And you've got a different tax scenario depending on what it is described as. It's really weird.
Yeah. Now, my biggest point was going to be,
yes,
we said we were going to sort all this sort of stuff out, like we said we were going to sort out taxation on residential properties, stamp duty, council tax bans, all that.
Yeah.
Instead, What we've done is either fiddled at the edges, like we did around property taxes in the budget,
yes.
or we seem to have fundamentally misunderstood the issues. And this latest business rates thing, where Rachel Reeves and James Murray are standing in Parliament saying we're bringing down business rates, when people are literally sitting looking at their business rate bill.
Yeah. And it's going
up.
I don't know
whether it's incompetence at the Treasury, because most of this seems to come back to the Treasury.
Yes.
Or a lack of just joined up planning across departments or whatever. But this is, for me, you could probably sense it in my voice, the massive frustration, because we said we were going to make some big changes, and we're either fiddling at the edges.
Is there someone at the door, or are you having building work done?
Sorry, yeah, they're replacing the roof. We're in temporary accommodation on Anglesey, and the guys have just turned back up whilst I've been on the phone.
We've got loads of building work going on here. Do you know what happened this morning, Malcolm? Not to make light of your contribution, which we'll return to imminently. They put up a screen on our floor where our office is, and Eleanor, the producer's tofu lunch, was on the other side of the screen. So her tofu lunch has actually been screened off. She can't get hold of her tofu lunch because the builders did it within half an hour of her getting to work. The fridge is in quarantine now. So I know what it's like. I know what it's like to have the noise going on. I agree with every single thing you said, and I share
I'm on Anglesey. By the way, what's a tofu lunch?
I share your sense of frustration as well. Let me read you what Anna Turley said this morning. I think I know what your reaction will be. This is actually about listening. I think it's a sign of a government that is actually in touch with people, that is listening to people, and that is responding. I think listening to constituents isn't being bullied or lobbied. That's what we're here to do. I could defend that in some circumstances. I could maybe have defended it 6 months ago. I don't think I can defend it today.
I feel for Anna Turley because she's been sent out to cover this. She's not got the departmental responsibility for this. It's not about the point is to get the decision right in the first place.
That's the point. That's not too much to ask. And if there's one or two examples of measuring twice, cutting once, or changing course when you've had a little better look at the road ahead, or the road ahead has changed, that's fine. But not when it seems to be more likely to happen than not. What are they doing before they make the announcements? Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, I hesitate to raise the farm tax. We've had 14 months of grief for something that is ultimately going to raise money that effectively will be a rounding error in Treasury budgets.
In the great scheme of things. This is where my running around the house looking for a few quid to pay the pizza delivery guy kicks in again. It's as if they're just desperate to find money and they're looking everywhere for it, and they're ending up sacrificing huge amounts of political capital on small change.
Exactly. And making decisions that people just don't see the logic in the decisions.
That is not a problem of messaging. That's a problem of not having logic in the decisions. This is my big breakthrough over the Christmas period. I've spent 6 months ago, it's all about comms. Everyone telling me it's all about the messaging. They're bad at comms. They're not. Well, they are, but that's a symptom, if you like, of not having a product. I don't know what they're selling. Thank you, Malcolm. A lot of people offering to drop some food off for you, Eleanor. I don't know. Hickory Smokehouse, apparently, is rather good for barbecue food. It's 1 minute after 11.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, more than 50,000 properties across the UK are still without power following Storm Gerety. Yellow weather warnings for snow cover large parts of Scotland, England and Wales until midday. Parts of the southwest of England saw wind gusts of 99 miles per hour overnight. Leader of Cornwall Council, Lee Frost, has told LBC a clean-up operation is already underway.
Most of our schools have got late openings, some have closed, so I would just urge anyone with a child in school just to keep an eye on the school's websites for further information.
The focus, you know, from our point of view is the roads, the footways and the critical infrastructure that we're in charge of, and we're just going to look to try and get as many trees off the roads, clear the roads as we can to get people back to normal.
The Midlands and Central Wales have also seen prolonged snow showers, with some flights at Birmingham and East Midlands airports grounded earlier today. Trains in central and southern England have also been impacted, with officials advising people to check before travelling. You can read the latest on Storm Gerety at lbc.co.uk.
Ukrainian officials say at least four people have been killed in Kyiv and 22 injured after a Russian airstrike overnight. Moscow says it was in response for an attack on one of Vladimir Putin's residences last year. Ukraine has denied responsibility. The social media firm X has switched off an image editing function for the vast majority of its users. It's after increasing pressure to stop people using the Grok AI tool to digitally undress people. The government had urged Ofcom to use all of its powers, including a ban against the site. And the British Beer and Pub Association says a potential U-turn on planned business rate hikes for pubs would be a huge win. LBC understands an announcement is expected within the next few days, but it's also understood it won't impact other retailers within the hospitality sector, with some calling that unfair. TV presenter James May, who co-owns a pub in Wiltshire, has told LBC many pubs are just about surviving.
I sort of agree with Tom Kerridge. We are supposed to be grateful for not being punched in the teeth, which is a strange situation to be in. I've often taken the view, it's not a very popular one amongst pub owners, to be honest, but I think we do have to stop thinking of pubs as, you know, an important part of our heritage or a vital tradition or an institution or an essential part of being British or any of that. They have to work as pubs.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 39 at 10,084. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather. Storm Goretti will slowly move eastwards throughout the day. Snow showers will linger, though, for a time in eastern England. Sunny spells and wintry showers elsewhere. A high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So you're getting a new pet. You've got bedding, you've got toys, you've got a name. But have you got insurance? Well, if you've got a Tesco Club Card, you'll get a Club Card discount on Tesco Pet Insurance. And all policies include vet phone for peace of mind 24/7. Just search online for Tesco Pet Insurance. Cats and dogs aged 8 weeks or over. Vet phone provided by Vets Direct Limited. Monetary limits, excesses and exclusions apply. Arranged by Pinnacle Insurance Limited.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
So there is the story, as you heard in Dominic's bulletin. You can go on to... How do we divide the world at the moment? I mean, I used to spend a lot of time on Twitter, as it was known then. Too much time, if I'm honest with you. But I loved it, and I had well over a million followers by the time I left. And I left pretty early. I presume some people left earlier than me, but I think to have that level of following and to just decide to walk away from it is a little bit harder than it probably sounds to you, because you're not going to find yourself in that kind of situation. It's a marketing tool as well. You know, when I've got a book out or when I'm promoting bits of the radio show, it was hugely important and hugely valuable. And I just couldn't countenance it anymore. It was an act. This is me sounding a little bit up myself, but you're used to that by now, I hope. It was an act of conscience. It was a genuine act of conscience for me. It was saying, I can't be part of this. And that's very personal, and I'm not suggesting everybody else should do that. LBC, the station, is still on there, and they still post my clips on there. So, you know, that it minimises some of the loss of business, if you like, or the loss of potential revenue for James O'Brien, the radio presenter. But James O'Brien, the dad, James O'Brien, the man, I couldn't stay on there. I just couldn't. Not when I saw the stuff that was being pushed onto people. I didn't want to be part of that anymore. And I would have stayed and fought the corner of the righteous if that hadn't been spoiled as well. You know, the obvious engineering of the site to promote Nazism, to promote white supremacism, to promote epic misogyny, while the voices that stand in opposition to all of those things were deliberately dialed down. You could see it happening in real time. It became unconscionable for me. That's a very personal thing. There is nothing more personal than conscience. And I think the government should come off the platform, but I wouldn't necessarily extend that to anybody or anything else. It is a personal decision that you make. And I think after discovering the joys of therapy, I would no longer be in the business of telling you what you should be doing according to my moral compass. So I'm off it. And I wonder how the world divides on this latest story that you just heard in Dominic's bulletin. You either probably know... Actually, it's not true. I was going to say you either know a lot about it or nothing about it. But even if you know something about it, you probably share some of the confusion that I feel this morning. You have... I still can't get there. I'm really sorry. I don't know why this is. It's like a sort of psychological blockage. I can tell you what's going on, but still not quite believe it, and I'm not going to go and look. You see, that's the problem. I'll have a look at some stuff on there if you send it to me, although it's a pretty odd thing to do to someone who's come off the platform. But if you think it's newsworthy enough, then obviously I'll have a little look while I'm in the studio. I'm not going to log on or sign in, but I can see it on my screen. I'm not going to go and look at what these sexually violent videos are. Fully pornographic videos that look professional. This is research by AI Forensics, a non-profit organisation based in Paris that just found 800 images and videos created by Elon Musk's app. And that includes pornographic content. So Laura Bates told me about this in a podcast interview and in her book about 6 months ago. She says, as ever, Laura Bates, who founded Everyday Sexism, very ahead of the curve on this, where they try to... terrorize women by putting their faces in footage, pornographic footage, and it can look it can look completely convincing. They're now doing it with child sexual abuse images. Do you see what I mean about, my tummy's going funny. You can go on Elon Musk's app and put a child's, you can make child sex abuse images, and you can, a child who hasn't actually been abused, you can create images of them being hasn't been physically abused. You can create images as if they had. You can make that film. So that is, for me, I'm finding this quite hard to talk about because I can't believe it's happening in a place that I used to consider home. That's the thing that's weird about it. I've told you a few times, this maybe needs a trigger warning. I told you a few times about an interview I remember reading with somebody who had to watch child sexual abuse as a police person to try to find culprits. And there's a line that haunts me to this day. There's a line that was contained within the interview with this poor man, this incredible man, whose job was to go through looking for things that might help them to identify abusers. It's like stuff in the background. And there's one line, I don't know if I can share it with you without... getting emotional, because it breaks my heart every single time I think about it. That there is a little girl who says, do all little girls do this with their daddy? And that was contained within the footage. That was contained, that's what he's watching. I hope they caught that guy because of something that this man managed to identify in the background of that film. And I know that exists, but it exists in sewers. And I know that it goes on in homes, but it is behind locked doors. And I wish we could catch more of these people. I wish people would put some of the energy that they put into pretending that they care about women or children who are being abused by members of ethnicities or religions that they are bigoted about and into all women and children that are being abused. But they don't, obviously. But there's something about this story that just absolutely sickens me to my core. And I can't believe it's still going on. I can't believe Dominic's bulletin contains the news that lots of people won't be able to do it anymore. Do you know who won't be able to do it anymore? The people who aren't paying Elon Musk. If you're paying Elon Musk, you can still do it. You can still instruct the technology to create pornographic footage of... A child whose photograph you have uploaded or provided. Three other stories that are going to perhaps highlight the sickness of what that place has become. There is a 15-year-old girl who died. She was educated in this country, and she died in that hideous nightclub fire in Switzerland over Christmas. And you can go onto Elon Musk's app and ask what she would look like in a bikini. Someone has done that. And you know, that's something her family will have to deal with and have to process. They've already done it to Renee Nicole Good. You can go on that app and ask. And remember, I'm going in quite mild. You can ask to see what she would look like in a bikini. You could do more. You could go further. And then there was another person I read about over the weekend who was photographed outside Auschwitz. And somebody asked Elon Musk's app to take her clothes away. And I can't quite understand how it's still going on, how that man can think that it is in any way suitable to respond by removing it from people who aren't paying him, but leaving it in place of people who are. And I know I say this to you quite often, and sometimes it's a little tiny bit performative. It's a bit theatrical. So I wonder what the question is. I always mean it. I never know exactly what question I'm going to ask you and pretend that I don't when I come on air. But I don't know what the phone-in is. I think that we just need to have a conversation about it. The woman outside Auschwitz, by the way, was a descendant of Holocaust survivors. And it speaks to all sorts of issues, this. I mean, the obviousness that these organizations these platforms are publishers and should be held responsible for what is published on their platforms. They're furiously resisting that. The fact that Musk has managed to get very much in front of the far-right white supremacist movement means a lot of people will be defending him, who, if it was somebody else doing it, would be able to find their moral compasses. Other people are not talking about it, I think, because it's so disgusting. And I don't want to be one of those people. I don't want to talk about this because I find it so disgusting. You know, when your mouth starts watering a bit at the back as you're getting ready to be a bit sick or something, that's how I feel about this story. I don't understand what's happening to our world. I really don't. And I think it has a resonance because it's happening on that platform, on X or Twitter, as it was called, when we used to swap jokes on there together and tease each other. And of course there was a little bit of trolling, but goodness me, I presume even the most committed trolls on Twitter are disgusted by what this is representing. It's unlawful, says Keir Starmer. We're not going to tolerate it. I've asked for all options to be on the table. It's disgusting. X need to get their act together and get this material down. We will take action on this because it's simply not tolerable. But what would the action be? You can't hurt them financially. You just turn it off, don't you? Get off their government. Say they can't come off it because it's one of the key sources of news for huge numbers of people in this country. Well, have you seen what it's like at the moment? It's not a source of news. It's a sewer. It's a petri dish for the most disgusting people and opinions. And a lot of it, of course, is manufactured anyway. So it's not a bug, to coin a phrase. It's a feature, I think. That's what we've learned this week. And I want to talk about it. But I don't have a neat and obvious question. I mean, I'd like to ask, why on earth do people do this? Let's do that. As I suspect women will find that question easier to answer than men. Why on earth would you see a picture of a dead 15-year-old schoolgirl and instruct the technology to put this person in a bikini? How on earth could you respond to the picture of Renee Nicole Good, dead in her car. Renee Nicole Macklin Good, dead in her car, killed by a federal immigration agent on Wednesday, and instruct the technology that you subscribe to put her into a bikini. And then to tell Grok how happy you are with it, and Elon Musk's technology responds by saying, glad you approve. What other wardrobe malfunctions can I fix for you? If you understand technology, tell me whether this is in any way excusable, as in the sense of it's a genie that's got out of the bottle. But we spoke to Eddie Perez earlier in the week, who worked for Twitter before it became a sewer, and he was adamant, and he worked in this sector. He was adamant that it's very easily fixed, and he explained to us with evidence of how amused Elon Musk, he even stuck a picture of himself in a bikini up there. It shows you how concerned he is. Can you get more misogynistic than that? Is it possible to imagine a more obvious hatred of women objecting to being abused in this way than to put a picture of yourself in a bikini up there. So there are two, at least, ways into this. The first is technology. What's going on? 0345 6060 973. The second is misogyny. Why would people... I know it's a silly question, but I think sometimes we need to hear the answers to questions like this. Why would people do this? And then I think it's an Elon Musk topic as well. What, you might know a lot about him. You might think you do. Why would he allow this? Why would Elon Musk allow this to continue? Why is Elon Musk allowing this to continue? And that cuts to the heart of all the issues we talk about on this program. Freedom of speech, far-right rhetoric. Why is Elon Musk allowing this to happen? I'm fairly clear, thanks to experts, that it's easy to stop. Why is Elon Musk allowing this to happen, and dare I say, apparently enjoying it? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Why is Elon Musk allowing this to happen when anybody with the vaguest social conscience, moral compass, sense of decency would do everything in their power to stop it in a heartbeat? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. And I'm clear about my disgust. I am not fully comprehending, fully cognizant of what is happening. I won't burn my eyeballs by going to look at some of this stuff. I understand and have described to you what it is. But if there is something that you want to simply add to the conversation, then feel free to do so on 0345 6060 973. Why is Elon Musk allowing, encouraging, comfortable with this? Why is it still going on? Regardless of him, why hasn't someone flicked a switch, pulled a plug, turned it off? And why would anybody respond to murder, death, tragedy by asking to see the victims in their underwear? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. It's one of the grossest things I've ever spoken to you about, and I honestly don't know the answer to that big question. Why is Musk letting this happen?
This is LBC.
Say yes to summer with the biggest ever TUI sale with a My TUI account. Say yes to flexible payment options. Say yes to free kids' places, even in the school summer holidays. With so many holiday options to choose from, you pick it, we sort it. Holiday countdown started. TUI, Atoll and Abta protected. Booking T's and C's apply. Selected departures. Minimum spend applies. Subject to availability. See website for details.
Yes! I just won £1,000 for free at Tombola.
Calm down. Although it's pretty great when you get something for free, right? But it's even greater because there's more. Did you know you can win thousands of prizes for free this January when you play Tombola's free-to-play games? Did I mention they were free? Download the Tombola app. That's also free, obvs, and play for free. Go on, be free this January. Tombola.
Open for fun.
£1,000 prizes in free bingo. Terms apply. 18+. Gambleaware.org.
This is your business. This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero Accounting Software. These are your numbers. These are your numbers sorted with the help of Xero Accounting Software. This is you.
Hi.
This is you taking business where you want with the help of Xero Accounting Software.
Hello, world.
This is your business supercharged with the help of Xero and having your numbers sorted all at the same time so you can finally focus on taking business where you want to. Supercharge your business today with the help of Xero.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
21 minutes after 11, Liz Kendall describes it as unacceptable in decent society. Keir Starmer describes it as unlawful, disgusting. Need to get their act together. So I don't know what right-wing politicians are saying. Some of them seem to have been desperate to butter up or suck up to Elon Musk in recent months, so they'll either be staying silent or pretending that they're unaware of it or don't understand the details. It is probably, in the context of access, availability, and context, it's probably the most disgusting thing that I think we've talked about together. Because it obviously is not as disgusting as incidents of actual abuse happening in actual places to actual people. But in the context of scale, what it does to a society to have this encouraged and mainstreamed, it's disgusting on a scale I don't think I've ever felt before. But of course, the question underpinning all of this is how is it allowed to happen, and why is Elon Musk doing it? 03456060973. Because, of course, what he's done today is prove that he could stop it. Taking it away, taking this ability away from people who don't pay him. But people who do pay him have still got it. So he's proved that he could take it away from everybody. He's chosen not to. I genuinely can't understand. Maybe I can understand because you're going to tell me, but I can't at the moment, for the life of me, imagine why he's doing this. He's the richest man in the world. So it can't be for cash. What does it say? Psychologically? I don't know. Philosophically? Personally? Grant's in Dartford. Grant, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, a bit like yourself. I came off X. I'd nowhere near the amount of followers that you had, but it was instantaneous, really, overnight. If you look at the way when he took it over, it turned into a cesspit of beliefs and, you know, just the morality of people on there has just gone through the floor. There isn't any moral understanding.
So
I pretty much came off it, you know, within a week of it going like that. It was evident that it was going to go that way. With regards to why he's doing it, I think it's a simple thing that, A, he can. There are no checks and balances to stop him, other than the outcry of people like us saying, you know,
and you sometimes think he enjoys that. I mean, it's a line I normally use with a smile on my face, but I'm not smiling now. It upsets all the right people, or it gets the woke.
It's exactly that. You're right in saying he's not doing it for the money. He's the richest man in the world. And he can turn this off, which he has done, although leaving it on for people that will pay him.
Mm.
So, again, there's the financial aspect there. But it's his whole attitude to everything about this. It's his view of, you know, his philosophy of, I believe, of objectivism. You know, his ethics and rational self-interest are the only thing that matters to him. If he feels that this is right, which he obviously does, he will allow it. I mean, shocked to hear that the girl that was shot by the ICE agent, the first thing someone with that mentality can think to do is put a dead body or her body in a bikini. I mean, what? It doesn't compute what is going through someone's mind. That is the first thing that they can think of to do. It just doesn't make any sense. And these people are almost a cult. If you like, of following this guy for what he believes, that he has the right to create this technology, which he does. Everybody has the right to create stuff. But whether it's right or wrong and it's being used for these kind of things, that's the question that's got to be asked. And to generate images of children. And this man, who is the richest man in the world, who has the ears of the leaders of the world, can sit there and allow this to happen with no moral judgment being pushed on him, on himself, other than by people like us. And he'll do nothing about it. He won't change.
Well, it's not just people like us, because Keir Starmer could do something about it. He says that he's going to. Quite how this is for Ofcom to deal with, and not the serious crime squad or the Metropolitan Police, I don't fully understand. That might change. But, I don't know. Normally, I quite like that answer, because he can. I think it applies to a lot of the most terrible things that have happened in the world. They're done by deeply damaged children who grow up to be deeply damaged men and think that they'll feel better inside by causing mayhem and hurt and harm outside. And he's doing it because he can. Do you think that's as far as we're going to get with this? Do you think it is just simply because, you know, we can speculate about all sorts of things. He's told incredible lies about this country. He's joined in the worst kind of far-right propaganda about London and the United Kingdom. He's talked about Jess Phillips and genocide even, and civil war, turning up at a Stephen Yaxley-Lennon rally, giving speeches there. And Kemi Badenoch, of course, refused to condemn him for any of that. No wonder she's quiet about this. It's like everything at the moment is about the people who are clumsy and correct correct, pointing out the hideous direction of traffic, being proved right on a daily basis, and all the people that were criticising or condemning or attacking them are either joining in now, going full fascist, or staying completely silent. But Musk is... I don't get it, mate. And you don't either, really. Because he can isn't enough, is it? It doesn't reach...
No, it's not enough. It's far from enough that he can, because it's just because he can doesn't mean that he should. But it's going back to the objectivism thing. He subscribes to the Ayn Rand philosophy of, you know, not having any checks and balances, being able to do what you want to do, whether you think it's right or not,
so
or anyone else thinks it's right.
These people,
not.
It's extraordinary that they think that people should be free to do absolutely anything they want except criticise them.
Exactly. With no checks and balances to, you know, go out and create a piece of software that strips children of their clothes and makes pornographic images of them. I mean, he feels that because he can do that, he will. And no one tells me what to do. And it's just diabolical that the government are standing by and letting this happen. You know, you were right in what you said again, that they use Twitter because it's a way of getting information. Yeah. That's absolute nonsense.
It doesn't
work. There
are
loads of platforms out there. There are, you know, they can send a text to a number and everybody receives it. They've done that test more than once. So that's absolute rubbish. Come off of...
Let's not get carried away. I think we'd be pretty hacked off if we were getting texts off Keir Starmer every 20 minutes. Oh, it'd be like the time that everybody got that U2 album on their iTunes account, whether you wanted it or not. But I take your point.
Exactly.
And of course, the more they go somewhere, all the journalists would have to follow them.
Yeah, they would have to, but it's the only way that people like him are going to see. Now, I know a lot of people that are still on X, I've got friends that are on the left, friends are on the right. You know, I had a discussion with one of my friends about me being on Blue Sky.
Yeah.
And he was, you would go to that because, you're a typical lefty. And I said, I'm not a lefty. I'm more interested in what's right.
I don't want to be on the site that promotes child sexual abuse imagery. It's not controversial.
You go on to that. And I mean, like I said to you, within a week of that place being taken over, the algorithms had changed so much.
And the people he let back on are some of the worst people. The statement of intent was clear. You could see it from space, if you pardon the pun. But, of course, there's none so blind as those that will not see. Let's be real, writes Emma. Starmer is scared of what Musk can do. Our economy's already in the doldrums. If Musk takes personal offence at the UK, which he already has, Emma, to be fair, as you know, what else can he turn off? What can his mates turn off? This is why we cannot have billionaires. Once you hit a billion, the UN should take everything over that amount and give it all to international food aid. Fear. I mean, why is Starmer not doing more? I'm going to read you something from Florian after the news, because this is the first he has heard of the story. And that's a fascinating position to be in, because if this is the first you've heard of the story, you could be forgiven for thinking that I've gone mad, couldn't you? You could be forgiven for thinking, no way, James must have got the wrong end of the stick. This can't be happening. What, the outside Auschwitz? The girl that died in the Swiss nightclub fire? The poor woman who was killed in Minneapolis on Wednesday? No, James, you must have... Well, it can't... But and yet it is. And it's been done on your child's phone by Elon Musk, who many politicians in this country still seem to woo and court. More of your thoughts about what on earth is going on. And Simon Marks will be joining us at 11:45 from the other side of the Atlantic for a quick update on what's going on there. But in the meantime, Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
More than 50,000 properties across the UK are still without power following Storm Goretti. Parts of the southwest of England saw winds of 99 miles per hour overnight. Yellow weather warnings for snow covering large parts of Scotland, England and Wales are in place until midday. Do stay with LBC for the latest. Officials in Ukraine say at least four people have been killed in Kyiv after a Russian airstrike overnight. Moscow says it was in response for an attack on one of Vladimir Putin's residences last year, which Ukraine has denied. And the social media firm X has switched off an image editing function for the vast majority of its users. It's after increasing pressure to stop people using the Grok AI tool, which has been used to digitally undress people. LBC weather. Storm Goretti slowly moving eastwards. Some snow showers will linger across the east of England. Sunny spells and wintry showers elsewhere. A high of 8 degrees.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big motoring world, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the biggest Furniture Village sale of the year. Save even more on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. But hurry, Early Bird offers end this Sunday at Furniture Village, a world-class family business.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60
973. It must be really weird to be hearing about this in detail, or indeed at all, for the first time today. Tony writes, this is the first I've heard of this story. This is absolute madness. Surely you could. There are crimes being committed all over the place. If a person, well, I don't know what the crimes are. Obvious, actually, the legislation is clear here and in France. The manipulation of these images is an offence. Possessing them, disseminating them, sharing them is an offence. But it's all happening in Elon Musk's back garden, front garden, house. So everyone's too frightened to do anything about it? Is it that simple? I need a little bit of help with this. I've got a few men waiting to talk to me, and that's fine, because we're trying to understand the issue, not just the behaviour. But I think we need a female perspective on the misogyny here, on the power game that's going on, because many, many men listening to this will not know what the men doing this get out of it. Do you see what I mean? We will be, and as my inbox demonstrates, we will be hearing this with an absolute sense of horror, but also disbelief. Incredulity is the right word. I suspect, and again, judging by my inbox, that women are a lot less incredulous than men. Does that make sense? I suspect that women are hearing a familiar song played on a new instrument. Because this is about misogyny. This is about power. But I think that I and many others would benefit from having that clarified. So why do men do this? Two questions. One, why is Elon Musk letting it happen? And why do men do it? I wonder if the answer is exactly the same. And it wouldn't be, as Grant and I conceded a moment ago, simply because he can. It will go much deeper than that. Why do men behave like this? What are they actually doing? And then, of course, why does Elon Musk allow it? So, Lorraine in Leicester sent me a message. I would not wish it on his children or condone it, of course. But I do wonder what would happen if his own children were being abused in this way. I wonder if he would find it in himself to care. Well, Lorraine, extraordinarily, one of his sons' mother has described herself as feeling horrified and violated after fans of Elon Musk used this tool to create fake sexualized images of her by manipulating real pictures. This is a woman, she's called Ashley St. Clair, who became estranged from Musk after the birth of their child in 2024. She's revealed that supporters of Elon Musk were using the tool to create a form of revenge porn, up to and including undressing a picture of her as a child. So what you cautiously describe is very close to happening, and it doesn't appear to have affected Elon Musk one jot. I felt horrified, I felt violated, especially seeing my toddler's backpack in the background, she said of an image where she'd been put into a bikini, turned around and bent over. I'm sharing with you the details of the story, and she puts it rather well. It's another tool of harassment. Consent is the whole issue. People are saying, well, it's just a bikini, it's not explicit, but it is a sexual offence to non-consensually undress a child. Why do men do it? And why is Elon Musk allowing it? Michael's in Shepton Mallet. Michael, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Bit of kind of context around my position. I'm kind of an ex-right winger. I used to actually really hate listening to you.
Okay.
But I now absolutely love listening to you, and I completely agree with everything
you know what that is. That's the woke mind virus that has got you in its grips, you see.
Yeah, so I'm infected, unfortunately. Mm. But, yeah, I think it fundamentally comes down to a lack of empathy from the right. I think as someone who's been in that camp and has kind of, you know, thought, oh, you know, it's just an image or it's just words. You shouldn't get so offended by these things. But you don't think about the people involved, and... Yes, I think it's a lack of empathy from men in general. And I think your point about getting women to be involved in the conversation more is good, because something that I've never understood as well is like catcalling. Like when men catcall at women, it like almost brain breaks me, because I just think, why would you do that? What do you get out of that? So I just find it really weird.
Again, this is two blokes chewing over an issue that affects women, but you probably are right to put that on the same page. It's some sort of articulation of power, isn't it? Or some, even if, you know, people write it off. It was one of the first phone-ins that informed my change of mind on feminist issues, actually, was listening to people explain responses to that, listening to older women say how they quite liked having their bottoms pinched at work because they found it flattering. And you find yourself in this very difficult position of mansplaining why they shouldn't have felt that way. But that's societal. That's what misogyny, that's what patriarchy means. That's what it does, is it creates these, roles that women are forced to fit into. And I suspect you're right to bring that into this conversation, because these men are trying to force women into other roles, supplicant roles, quasi or even actually pornographic roles. It's the non-consensual that is the element. This is where I sometimes get a bit potentially prudish. You do whatever you want if it's consensual, even if it's stuff that makes my eyes water. But if it's not consensual, then it becomes the thing that Michael describes, whether it's, you know, telling a woman what you think of her when she hasn't invited your comments and isn't interested in them, or, in this case, going much, much further, the sort of weapons-grade equivalent, which would be ordering technology to undress her. Thank you, Michael. V is in Horsham. V, what would you like to say?
I think the mayor of Minneapolis summed this up in his press conference the other day.
Some words he used that you're not allowed to use in this.
I won't use those words.
Thank you.
He described the reckless use of power. And I think both on the broader scale and on the closer to home scale, this is exactly what Musk is doing. It's the reckless use of his own power to run a system like this. But for the people that are using this facility, it's a sense of power, it's a sense of irresponsibility, it's a sense of humour that is being normalised. That's where we cross the line. We're using a facility like this, where maybe some decades ago, like you said, this was behind locked doors, this was behind the scenes, where we would balk at this disgusting behavior in public. Now we're being told that this is acceptable, this is normal, and this is accessible for the vast majority of people. And let's face it, looking at X at the moment, most people have started paying for that blue tick when that all came across.
Yeah.
So many people are already paying for his service, and therefore this facility as well.
There's more than one thing going on here. I hadn't realized that until I started listening to you. And I presume that there must be lots of men who find the child sexual abuse repellent, but quite like the idea of subjugating women.
Do
you see what I mean? So for them, I wonder if it is, well, that's pretty gross and I wouldn't want to get involved in that, but if that's the price we have to pay in order to see every woman naked that we want to see, or every woman stripped down to her underwear against her own will and without her consent, then it's got an air of both incels and trad wife rhetoric, doesn't it? It's about power and dominion and women being pushed back into a place where they had to do what men wanted them and told them to do.
And the more you squeal, the more you scream and protest, the more of a victim you become.
Yes.
And that's him laughing. That's Musk in his bikini. That is him laughing at the people who are shouting about how completely unfair and abhorrent it is. And why? Why as a society are we accepting the normality of this? Why doesn't it even exist there? And you're right, Starmer, turn the bloody thing off. We don't need
it's a
anymore.
Child protection issue. It's not even a freedom of speech. You're being publicly turned into a victim. At somebody's whim, and Elon Musk loves it.
He absolutely loves it.
He must hate women, right? He must really, really hate women to be where he is now on this.
I think he loves anybody that is less than him. He otherizes the whole planet. He pushes everybody else who isn't Musk, who isn't Trump, who isn't a billionaire, is an other to him
pawn.
And less than him. And if anybody out there thinks that he thinks anything other than that, they have got completely the wrong end of the stick.
It makes me wonder how much of the sort of Protect Our Women brigade are actually projecting their own hatred of women and trying to pretend that they're not massive misogynists because only Muslims can be, or only brown men can be, or only men of Pakistani heritage. Because you would presume if there was a scintilla of sincerity in the Protect Our Women rhetoric, then this would be the biggest story since Noah's Ark. This would be the biggest story of our time. For those people, for the people on Little Tommy Ten Names' marches and stuff like that, and the people protesting outside the asylum houses, this would be the biggest story ever, because this is about every woman potentially being a victim of misogynistic abuse, every child potentially being a victim of child abuse, and they seem to be either silent or unconcerned. I wonder how much of that whole Protect Our Women and Girls thing, the leaders of it, not the people who fall into those places, because as with most extremisms, a lot of people fall into it through no fault of their own and for perfectly understandable reasons, but the people monetizing it, the people leading it, are projecting their own hatred of women onto other men in order to get themselves off the hook. It's just a theory, but I think you'd have to get up very early to argue with it. Thank you, V. The time is 11:45.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
65 to 70% of our cocaine comes from Colombia. Should we be going into Colombia? Should we be taking out Colombia on the basis of this? Should we be taking out the Colombian leader?
We have our own war on drugs, which sadly we're losing. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
They've kidnapped the guy. They've literally abducted him. They've taken him to a New York court. Don't get me wrong. Nasty, horrible, brutal dictator. No one's weeping for him. But the precedent is clear. They are literally putting out pictures of the guy on this helicopter, blindfolded, and you're saying, that could be fine.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets.
based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on. What about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
From London Gatwick, fly Singapore Airlines to Singapore and beyond. To the beauty of Bali, the warmth of Thailand, and the wonders of Vietnam, or many other Asian destinations. With daily flights and award-winning service, your next adventure starts here. Fares to Thailand starting from £614. Book your escape today at singaporeair.com. Offer ends 26th of January. Terms and conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
11:49 is the time. The Commons Women Inequalities Committee has stopped using Elon Musk's platform as this, I don't even want to call it a row, as this hideous, hideous scandal continues to unfold in plain sight. And I hope many other political individuals and institutions join forces. But it is to American politics that we return our attention next. Simon Marks joins us live from Washington, D.C. Towards the end of yesterday's conversation, Simon, we turned, as we often do, towards the question of how the media will respond to the latest abomination, in this case, the killing of Renee Nicole Good. And we kind of have an answer of sorts, because it turns out that four members of the New York Times staff spent an almost unprecedented amount of time with the president, with Donald Trump, in the immediate aftermath of the Venezuela abduction. What do we learn from this? What do we learn from that? And how does it actually answer the question of how some legacy media that isn't in the pocket of Trump or his supporters is going to rise to the challenge of telling the truth while he and his closest associates continue to lie through their teeth?
Well, I mean, absolutely extraordinary, really, James. The New York Times, four of their reporters had the opportunity on Wednesday to spend over an hour in the Oval Office with the President of the United States, even watching him as he took a telephone call with President Gustavo Petro of Colombia. They were allowed to report that they had seen him having that call. The contents of the call were understandably restricted by the White House, although it is unbelievable that any president of the United States would ever conduct a phone call with another head of state, let alone another head of state he was at the time threatening to attack, in front of four reporters from the country's leading national newspaper. They started reporting what they had heard in that more than an hour-long interaction with Donald Trump on Wednesday evening, and indeed their initial dispatch focused on what he'd said about Venezuela and his decision that the United States is now going to be running Venezuela indefinitely. There's no timetable for elections, doesn't even think Venezuela is capable of holding an election, and certainly the United States will be owning Venezuelan oil for the foreseeable future. It was nearly 24 hours later before the New York Times, which had told us that they were going to be writing several articles based around these conversations with Donald Trump, almost 24 hours later before the newspaper disclosed to the American public that Donald Trump had used the phrase during the interview, I Don't Believe in International Law, had announced that he wasn't going to be constrained by international law, that he would instead be constrained only by his own morality. That's all I need, he said. Almost but 24 hours they sat on that. So, well, I mean, that's the other aspect of it, of course. Yes. I mean, the notion that, that the world is going to be now hanging on Donald Trump's own personal morality, which I think we can all, even Trump supporters, I think, would stipulate to the notion that at times the president's morality is somewhat questionable. But the idea that the old grey lady, you know, the nation's leading newspaper, would sit on that for nearly 24 hours at a time when, for example, our own Prime Minister has been saying he needs to hear from Donald Trump the legal rationale for what took place last weekend in Venezuela. Well, guess what? There isn't going to be a legal rationale because the President of the United States says, I don't need international law. And by the way, James, I just tried to find that story again on the New York Times website. It's not even on the homepage anymore. I mean, it's partly because, of course, so much is going on here. We're in this, the last week has been the craziest news cycle on record, but you can't even find it on the homepage anymore, which is pretty staggering given the nature of what the president disclosed to those journalists.
What would you have done? I know that's a completely unfair question, but let's imagine it was you and me. It's unlikely, Simon. Let's not quibble. It's you and me that were sitting in the Oval Office. And Donald Trump said, I'm just going to take a call from the President of Colombia. What would you have done? What would we have done?
Well, I think we would have done what the New York Times did with regard to the phone call with President Petro.
I think we should leave the room. I think we shouldn't be party to this.
Well, I definitely wouldn't have said that.
I would
have said no.
Yeah, that's the point.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. No, you'd stay in the room. My issue is not with them listening. I mean, I think it's bizarre.
No, I know. Mine isn't either.
That the White House.
Of course.
I mean, bizarre, right? But
I was just enjoying the image of you and me sitting. I was just enjoying the image of you and me sitting in the Oval Office. That's the only reason I asked the question. Back to.
I was more enjoying the image of you and me leaving the Oval Office, him having said, I don't believe in international law, and us in the grounds of the White House immediately calling the newsroom and saying, blimey, we've got a heck of a scoop.
Except as that over disappearance from the homepage kind of, all he's done is say out loud what everybody paying attention knew to be true, isn't it? I mean, it puts some of his supporters in temporary discomfort for pretending or claiming or genuinely believing that he wasn't all of the things his critics have described him as. But we come back to that point again, whereas will anybody let go of their support for Trump as a consequence of him proving that he's all the things they insisted he wasn't?
The whole week has been President Trump saying out loud the things that he would not previously have said out loud, not just on international law, but on this whole notion that he will be the determining factor in terms of what territory the United States takes, that if he wants to seize Venezuelan oil, he's going to go right ahead and do it. After that call with President Petro, he said that he's not planning currently to launch attacks on Colombia, but it absolutely remains in his back pocket, as does the possibility of military action to seize Greenland. I mean, the paper says that in his conversation with the Times, Mr. Trump sounded more emboldened than ever before when asked what was the higher priority, obtaining Greenland or preserving NATO. Mr. Trump declined to answer directly, but acknowledged it may be a choice. He made it clear that the transatlantic alliance was essentially useless without the United States at its core. I mean, I got a text last night from a former State Department official who simply wrote to me, "We are teetering on the edge." And I think that that is an accurate reflection of how dramatically his language, his approach, his bruiser presentation of himself on the world stage has shifted in what, just 9 days since the start of the year.
Before we talk about Renee Nicole Good and how and who is amplifying and supporting Trump's lies about what happened to her, it was Louis XIV, I think, who said, l'état, c'est moi. shortly before he got his head chopped off. That is the French equivalent of saying the only thing that matters is me.
Totally.
It is pure Louis 100%. The 14th territory. Wow. The final question, who, I mean, no surprises, I don't imagine. Is anybody dissenting from the Trump line? Is anybody actually declining the order to ignore the evidence of their own eyes and ears? Have there been any sort of Marjorie Taylor Greene type moments where a slavish devotee actually wakes up and smells some of the coffee?
Yeah, I mean, well, we have seen Marjorie Taylor Greene moments, but she, of course, has already departed the train. There is absolutely no one on the inside at all that is raising any public questions about this. No indication that anyone's raising any private questions about it. I mean, Marco Rubio appears at times to be very discomforted by the situation in which he has placed himself, but he shows no indications of drawing any kind of line in the sand. I mean, we're even at the point now where the president told Fox News last night that he's going to meet next week Maria Corina Machado, the opposition leader from Venezuela. And he indicated that if she would like to pass her Nobel Peace Prize onto him, he would graciously accept it. He would consider that to be a very gracious move by Ms. Machado. He is basically holding this Nobel Peace Prize up as one of the prices that she has to pay in order to secure American support, even for her just to return to Venezuela. They haven't even demanded that opposition leaders must be allowed back in to Venezuela. So that's the sort of the venal point at which we now find ourselves. And, the gloves are off. I mean, the veil has been lifted.
Yeah.
There's no pretense anymore about the nature of authoritarian rule in this country today, but also, of course, at the end of this week, about the nature of the police state that he is creating here.
I you know how much I value your contributions, because you crystallise the things that we're frightened to address sometimes, the seriousness, the profundity of these moments. Bellingcat, the New York Times visual investigation team, Washington Post visual forensic team, all publishing analysis showing that the man who shot Renee Nicole Good was not in her path when he shot her, completely and comprehensively contradicting statements made by Donald Trump and his various cronies, and nobody has broken ranks. That's terrifying.
Well, it was J.D. Vance yesterday who I think provided a really blood-chilling appearance at the White House. If you've not watched it, the rant that J.D. Vance went on behind that White House podium, accusing Renee Nicole Good of being part of a lunatic, radical left fringe. He wouldn't even use her name. He kept referring to her as that woman. I mean, there were almost echoes of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky in it.
Yeah.
Insisting that she had used her car as a weapon to ram officers engaged in the entirely legal law enforcement operation in which they were engaged. He dragged her name through the mud. He attacked the media, saying that the media that had been falsely, in his words, reporting what had occurred were propaganda agents of the radical left. He claimed that her shooting was justified based on her actions. And there is no, you can't even take a casual glance at that video and reach that kind of conclusion. And the other thing we learned yesterday, James, is that they are absolutely going to whitewash the investigation. I mean, it's not even going to be a proper investigation.
So the FBI
now cutting out Minnesota.
Yeah.
They're cutting out the local law enforcement and the local investigators, the FBI taking this in-house only. And we already heard from J.D. Vance yesterday. The agent is a hero. I mean, it will not be long before that agent finds himself invited into the Oval Office to be personally congratulated and thanked by President Donald Trump for the stone-cold, at close range shooting of an American citizen who may or may not have been participating in protests against ICE and its anti-immigration operations. But even if she was not clearly engaged in illegal activity.
I was a little bit ambushed at the end of last year by the obviousness of that moment in the Oval Office when they brutalised and insulted and sought to humiliate Volodymyr Zelensky, being of epic historical significance, being the moment that America's role on the world stage was comprehensively and irreversibly rewritten for the length of Trump's administration and his followers. It can be reversed, of course, when decent people get back in. This is the domestic equivalent, right? I mean, I know that this is death, so this isn't just words, but this is the point at which, as Trump goes public with his contempt for international law, this is the point at which his administration detaches itself entirely from domestic law.
Yes, and it's interesting that in that New York Times piece, I mean, the reporters argue that President Trump, there was a distinction between the lack of constraint that President Trump felt on the world stage and the constraint of the court, certainly not Congress, that he professed to feel domestically. But when you start killing American citizens, civilians, dead on the streets of Minneapolis, two people injured in Portland yesterday by the Border Patrol, who, again, are not cooperating with Oregon's investigation into what took place to that man and that woman found shot in a vehicle in Portland after they raised the alarm yesterday. When you have the masked agents of an authoritarian government taking to the streets and terrorizing, and in Minneapolis, killing members of the public, the train has left the station and it's not going to be returning anytime soon.
And Simon, thank you. And we will continue to track its progress wherever it ends up heading next with your help, for which we remain ever grateful. 3 minutes after 12 is the time. It's been a week, hasn't it? As Simon said, a news cycle from America and in America, the likes of which I can't remember witnessing before. Things have been quite as frenzied or as frantic here. I'm currently minded to have a little bit of fun in the next hour. Just a little bit of fun. It's based on the news. Almost everything we do is. But it's a question partly inspired by a story in the news today and partly inspired by Luke Littler that ranks among one of my all-time favourite questions that I've ever asked you. We may wade mercilessly back to the deep end, but just a quick heads up, we may spend a little time splashing about in the shallow end after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, more than 50,000 properties across the UK are without power this lunchtime following Storm Goretti. Most of the outages are in the southwest of England. Wind gusts of 99 miles per hour were recorded at St Mary's Airport on the Isles of Scilly. Lucy Griffiths lives in Cornwall and has told LBC that fallen trees are causing major disruption.
We've got no power till Sunday morning at 8. No water, we've just discovered. No method of getting out of the village because at the moment it's blocked by fallen trees. So we're going to have to charge the phone in the car.
Rail passengers across England, Scotland and Wales are being warned to expect delays throughout today. Some flights at Birmingham and East Midlands airports were grounded earlier after heavy snow. Greg Dewhurst is from the Met Office and says Storm Goretti will weaken as the afternoon progresses.
Storm Goretti is now just sat to the southeast of the UK and it's going to continue to bring some very strong winds, outbreaks of rain, sleet and snow through the day today. So we still have Met Office warnings out, but the wind strengths are coming down.
Yellow weather warnings for snow covering England and most of Scotland have been extended until midday tomorrow. You can keep up to date with Storm Goretti at lbc.co.uk. Elsewhere this lunchtime, Ukrainian officials say at least four people have been killed in Kyiv after Russia fired a hypersonic missile. Moscow says the overnight strike was in response for an attack on one of Vladimir Putin's residences in December. Ukraine has denied responsibility. The social media firm X has switched off an image editing function for the vast majority of its users. It's after pressure from UK and European politicians to stop people using the Grok AI tool, which has been used to digitally undress people. The government had urged Ofcom to use all of its powers, including a ban against the site.
And a group of MPs say some people are waiting more than a year to have their disability benefits claims processed. The Public Accounts Committee's warned that people can be pushed into debt and poverty as a result. It claims the Department of Work and Pensions has failed to meet its target and doesn't have an adequate plan for reducing weights. The DWP is yet to comment. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 44 at 10,089. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, Storm Goretti will slowly move eastwards. Snow showers will linger for the east of England and sunny spells and wintry showers elsewhere, a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Eight minutes after 12 is the time. I wonder if this needs to be a New Year's resolution, but I spend a lot of time putting the boot into people who are essentially client journalists for, most obviously for wealth, but also more specifically for the absolute insanity of Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity, whatever it may be. Do you think I spend enough time telling you good people to read and follow? It's always a tricky thing to do, actually, because you'll always get somebody who goes, oh, well, I don't like them because they did this. It's impossible to publicly like anything in the world of the internet. Have you noticed this? If you recommend something on social media, someone will point out that it's behind a paywall or that they don't have the, they don't subscribe to the platform upon which the film that you're recommending appears, or that not everybody can afford to buy a book or go to the theatre. And I know that that's true, and I'm not in any way making light of the reality being described, but what's the point of telling me? It's such an odd thing to do. And yet that is the world that we live in, and I'm almost certainly guilty of it myself. You may be aware, I'm going to give you a little example. I'm just going to have a little sip of tea so that people watching this on YouTube later will know exactly what I'm talking about, okay? So you may be aware that I own an enormous mug. My LBC mug is, I mean, obscenely large. It's so large that it makes people laugh out loud if they don't know that it's coming. So we went on the Australian equivalent of Have I Got News For You, or a kind of satirical news show in Australia, and they just showed the clip of me. I don't think it had anything to do with what they were discussing, and I was being quite grown up for a change. And then I just, mid-spiel, I just had a sip of tea, and the minute that my enormous mug moved into shot, everybody started laughing. It's a comically large mug. My mug is a very large mug. But people keep telling me that I've got a very large mug. I walk about because we're having a little bit of building work done in the office at the moment. Well, a heck of a lot of building work being done in the office at the moment. And it means, for example, that poor old Eleanor, the producer of this programme, has lost her lunch. When she came into work this morning, the fridge that she keeps her tofu in was accessible. And when the show started at 10 o'clock, the fridge was no longer accessible. A new wall had been installed temporarily, behind which all sorts of building work is going on, but also behind which lurks the fridge in which Eleanor's lunchtime tofu was nestling. I mean, between you and me, it means that she's failed to read about 458 emails that have been sent out to everybody in the building about when these temporary walls would be erected and why you should get everything out of your fridge before 10 o'clock on Friday morning. But because we're having a lot of building work done in the office at the moment, across all the floors, Global Towers, I find myself wandering around the building looking for things like lavatories and taps, because I need a very special kind of tap to fill my tea mug up because it's so enormous. I can't do it with a kettle. Well, there aren't really any kettles, but even the urns that have been put in place temporarily, if I go and fill my mug from an urn, if there's a there'd be a queue behind me by the time I finish. So I look for one of those special taps that are all over the building where you know, the boiling water that comes out of the tap, boiling. But it means that I'm going to parts of the building that I haven't gone to before. Every day there's a new wall has been built, as Eleanor discovered this morning. And it means that a whole new bunch of people get to see me walking around the building with my enormous mug. And almost every single one of them will say to me, gosh, that's an enormous mug. To which I have no idea how to respond. It's like, what do you say? Yes, I know. I know. I'm walking around. Shall I express surprise? Shall I go, good grief, you're right. It wasn't this size when I got into work this morning. What's happened to my mug? I own an enormous mug. But it's so enormous that everybody feels the need to say so as I walk by. And I wonder, I mean, I don't get irritated by it. I get amused by it. I don't know whether I'd have got mildly irritated it on the 14th or 15th occasion that it happened in a single morning in my pre-therapy days. But the way to, I mean, people are being nice. People are trying to make conversation, or they're genuinely gobsmacked by the size of my mug. And in order just to sort of remind myself, I had to imagine what I would do if I passed somebody on the stairs who had an even bigger mug than mine. So if I passed on the stairs somebody with an even bigger mug than this, there's no way I wouldn't say anything. Nobody is going to walk past a mug the size of a beer barrel without commenting if it's the first time that they've seen it on the size of the mug. It's a perfectly normal thing to do. And yet, of course, everybody does it. I don't know if it's the same as me recommending that you read something and then you telling me you can't read it because it's behind a paywall. I know it's behind a paywall. I'm recommending it to people who can read it. You wouldn't say to me if I recommended a book, you say, well, I don't know why you're recommending that book. I haven't got it. Would you? So when I recommend a film, why do you say to me, well, I don't know why you're recommending that film. I don't subscribe to Amazon Prime. That's not my problem. I wish everybody had all of the things that I've got, but I know that you don't. A lot of my stuff is work anyway, the subscriptions to newspapers and things. But anyway, all of that is a very odd diversion from the fact that I was wondering whether you think I should recommend more things to you rather than just taking a swing at the shills and client journalists who have done so much to pollute public discourse in this country over the course of the last 10 years. Because I have to tell you that Martin Samuel, who is by day the doyen of sports reporters, writes such a beautiful notebook in the Times newspaper on Fridays that I turn to it first, and I urge you to read it every day as well. And he gets it today. I mean, he's writing in Rupert Murdoch's Times, so his article appears opposite one by someone called Gerard Baker, which is a really desperate, desperate piece of journalism trying to sort of almost put a positive gloss on what Trump has been up to this week. I mean, the deeper you've gone in on Trump, the harder it is now to admit what's really happening. And so an awful lot of people, including this Baker character, are going to have to undertake contortions the like of which the world has rarely seen in order to either put a positive gloss on the hideousness or pretend that it's not hideous. His article ends with the line, "Power creates its own rules. And while you may not like the new world order, the new world being born, you surely cannot dispute that powerlessness in the end creates nothing." He's got no idea what he's talking about. He just knows that as someone who either did or came perilously close to using the phrase Trump derangement syndrome as an insult, he is now in a position where all of the people that he used to argue with and criticize have been proved irrefutably right. So poor old Martin has to write his stuff opposite this bilge. But what he writes is beautiful. And it merits a little mention this morning. I'll read you the beginning and the end of the article. "Just shoot them in the face. That's the new normal? Question mark. The new penalty for low-level disobedience? Question mark. If indeed there was any low-level disobedience. Summary, public, final, and apparently justifiable." And then I'm not going to spoil the rest by reading it all out because I really want you to seek it out. And he goes on to make the point that we made via W.B. Yeats earlier in the week about the difference between anarchy and rules, pointing out that he's not Rick from the Young Ones, and won't be calling someone a fascist just because they've told you to wait for the next bus because this one is full. But this final line here, these final two lines here, "But convincing the public what it sees is not what happened, then blaming and framing an unarmed individual for her own death? Question mark. It may not worry you, but it scares the bejesus out of me." Sometimes short-form journalism is the most powerful. when I first worked on a tabloid newspaper, my late father, who worked on the Telegraph, said to me, that's harder. Sometimes it's harder to do in 200 words what broadsheet journalists can do in 2,000 words. And the notebook is short form. It's not a big column. It's just, you know, a few paragraphs. And that's just perfect, what Martin Samuel has written today. And I really urge you to seek it out. He doesn't do any other story. He focuses exclusively on that one, but he comes at it from various different angles. And it is one of those rare moments when I can open up the Times newspaper and feel proud to be part of the same profession as somebody. So that is one of my New Year's resolutions, to make a little bit more recommendations of positive stuff, rather than routinely reminding you of the awfulness of people like Dick Littlejohn. But that's not what we're going to be talking about this hour. Stay tuned to find out what we are going to be discussing after this.
This is LBC.
The biggest Furniture Village sale of the year is on now, and it's everything you've been waiting for. Early bird offers in the Furniture Village sale end Sunday.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields, or simply relax with a podcast, playlist, or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Business healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
I love this. It's on the subject of my enormous mug. Tony's near Hull. He says, I was born on Christmas Day, James. So whenever I have to give my date of birth, people will respond and say, oh, that's Christmas Day. I try not to respond by saying, is it? I don't know why I find this so funny and so interesting. But we could, how long do you reckon we could get towards Sheila Fogarty without talking about anything? Can we do an hour not talking about anything? I got a message during the last bit of the show. It said, have you seen this, James? On Blue Sky. So I thought, oh, I wonder what that could be. So I clicked on it, and it's a message that isn't sent to me, and it's not been posted by someone who follows me, so they may not know anything about this programme. They may not even know that this radio show exists, or that it is adorned by a man named Keith. But here is the message. Have you seen this, James? Asked Penny. I went to a toddler class today, and there was a toddler called Keith. That's just a moment for regular listeners to revel in, isn't it? We may have found, albeit obliquely, our youngest Keith. Keith's back, baby. What are we going to talk about? Golf. Golf and darts. I really, really like this because at first glance it's silly, but the more you think about it, the more interesting it becomes. A gym boss... writing in the Wall Street Journal, he's not your ordinary gym boss, he's the managing partner of a luxury gym company, has claimed that golf is not exercise. You're hitting, I like his turn of phrase as well as his thought processes, you're hitting a little white ball around a golf course using a golf cart, and drinking at the ninth hole. I mean, really, there are two words, aren't there, for anybody who thinks that playing a lot of golf keeps you fit and healthy. One of those words is Donald, and the other one is Trump. But it's quite a controversial take, and lots of England Golf, the governing body for amateur golf in this country, has mounted a vigorous defence of the game, espousing its various health benefits. I think the golf cart is going to be the deal-breaker. If you're spending your whole time being driven around in a cart... you're probably not doing anything that is exercise heavy, cardiovascular health, strength, balance, burning calories. If you're walking around the course, Mark Twain, of course, described golf as a good walk ruined, then you probably are. Well, you obviously are getting more exercise than if you're just sitting on your backside at home. But I for most people, going for a nice walk doesn't necessarily constitute major exercise. That's not what I wanted to talk about. That's just a way into this conversation. I've been waiting since Monday, since the day we got back. I nearly said to school. I literally just caught myself. Since the day we got back to school. We all got back to school, didn't we, on Monday. I've been waiting to talk to you about Luke Littler and darts. As you may know, I love darts, and I loved it long before it became fashionable. My first trip to the Circus Tavern in Purfleet, I think we recorded it for this programme, didn't we? Or did I just go with the producer at the time on a Christmas jolly? I can't remember. But I love darts. And Luke Littler is a phenom. How do you pronounce that word? P-H-E-N-O-M. It's like a miniature version of phenomenon. And the reason why I love darts is because in the same way that I love snooker, I marvel at what human beings can do. So I also really like bridges and cranes for the same reason. I really like the stuff that makes me feel small. So the Olympics 100 metres, in some ways, speaks to a similar appetite inside me, but not as loudly. Not as loudly as darts does. There's something primal about darts. There's something so fundamentally human about throwing things accurately that I can watch it for hours, darts. But here's the phone in. As a gym boss in New York says that golf isn't exercise, what is a sport? How are we going to define us? Because I think darts should be in the Olympics. Not least because we'd be guaranteed a gold medal, wouldn't we? Same with snooker, actually. But why do I think darts is a sport, but I'm not sure that snooker is? 03456060973. Is golf a sport? Yes or no. Is darts a sport? Yes or no. Is snooker and of course, we could be here all day, couldn't we? I could just name every sport. Some sports, nobody would dispute that they're sports. But what, and don't look anything up, let's not spoil it. Do you remember the phone-in we did about 20 years ago about why gold is valuable? I mention it to you quite a lot. I think it was the birth of Mystery Hour, actually. But the questions that seem silly at first glance, but get more and more interesting the more that you think about them. Why is gold valuable? That's not the phone-in. Don't ring me to tell me why gold is valuable. We may let ourselves do it. Have we got any big anniversaries coming up? If we've got a big anniversary coming up, they celebrated Nick Ferrari's 20th anniversary on this radio station, you know. Nobody mentioned mine. I didn't even get a card. Seriously, the whole thing went by without even a raised eyebrow or a nod in the lift from the boss. They had enormous celebrations. I think they hired out the Albert Hall for Nick Ferrari's 20th anniversary on LBC. I got nothing. It's the independence, it's the anniversary of the independence of the United States of America, but I don't think that's not really one of ours, is it? We haven't got anything coming up until the 25th anniversary of my time on this radio station. I don't know, but if there's a nice anniversary up, then we'll do that again. We'll have an anniversary phone in on why gold is valuable. So Karen points out Connect Four isn't a sport, but it does involve mental acuity and mental agility. So what I want to assemble between now and 1 o'clock is a workable theory of what makes a sport. Because I think golf is a sport, and I think darts is a sport, but oddly, and I'm a huge fan of snooker, for some reason, subconsciously, whatever subconscious criteria I have in place to define what a sport is, for some reason, snooker currently isn't reaching them. But it's golf and darts that we're focusing on first. Golf because it's in the news, and darts because I have been trying to bring Luke Littler into the conversation since we got back to school on Monday. And if you're wondering why, it's because he's 19 years old. No offence to the lad, but he's not what you would describe as a picture of health, like most darts players. He just looks like he enjoys a kebab, and he's quite open about the fact that he does enjoy a kebab. I'm not a picture of health myself. There's no side involved in this. But what do you think? What do we think actually constitutes a sport? What would be the single thing you said proves that something is a sport? I can tell you that that is a sport because... And think about it, because it's actually a really good question, this. That is a sport because when I finish playing, I am what? Or I feel what? Or while I am playing, I do what? Or I feel what? Darts, to an outsider, is usually overweight men throwing things in a pub. But to an insider, it's a titanic challenge. It's an extraordinary physical and mental feat. The concentration levels needed. Do you know what dartitis is? It's a real thing. Dartitis involves raising, just, you've got your dart's arm up, you're getting ready to throw a dart, and you can't let go of it. It's like a mental turmoil, a paralysis, a psychosomatic paralysis. Jan van Veen, who got beaten by Luke Littler in the final this year, this time last year he was suffering from dartitis. You can't let go of the dart. So when I say mental and physical, I'm not exaggerating. So despite on paper not ticking any of the boxes that you might ordinarily associate with sport, to me, darts is an absolutely pure sport. But why? Why? What would you use as the definition of a sport? I'll shut up, shall I, and take some calls. Adrian's in Southampton. Adrian, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. How you doing?
Very well, mate.
We haven't spoken for a long time. I was homeless the last time I speak to you, but that's a long time ago.
Now, anyway, and you're no longer homeless?
I'm not anymore, no.
Well,
I'm
fantastic not news, mate. That's brilliant. I'm so glad to hear that.
That's all right. I don't know why I said that. Anyway,
it's important. It's quite a big deal, mate, isn't it, being homeless? I can't believe you're surprised that you've said it. I think if I'd been homeless any time recently, I'd have mentioned it. It's like my mug. You can't not mention it.
I'm one of those saddos that thinks that after the thousands of callers you've had in the interim, you'd remember that call.
Did you live in your car?
No, I was. You helped me actually. A couple of people phoned in and helped out. It was around Christmas time,
that's
about
nice.
4 years ago.
That's lovely. Anyway,
snooker.
Yeah,
I've just pulled into the services because you've wound me up. You don't do that very often, right? So I'm on my way to play snooker now. I started playing snooker 3 years ago for the first time ever in my life. Decided I was going to be a coach when I retire. That was the plan.
Oh, that's nice.
I practice 3 hours a day. And in those 3 hours, I do about 600 sit-ups. You think about it, you're bending down, you're standing up, you're bending down, you're standing up. And yeah. I walk about 5 kilometres every single day playing snooker. Now, you tell me that darts does that, because it doesn't.
What's your biggest break?
107.
Cool, you are in 3 years?
Yeah, I've practiced a lot. Three hours a day for 3 years is a lot, yeah.
That's amazing.
It's not. I promise you, it's hard work. It's really hard
Hang
work.
On a minute. Before we get stuck into that, when you got your 107, did you then miss one, or was that a clearance?
To be honest, I didn't realise I'd done it until... Because I video myself sometimes. I didn't realise I'd done it until... If I'd known I'd done it, I'd have practised. I'd have concentrated a bit harder.
You might have got more if you'd known how that you'd gone over 100. So, okay, that's really powerful. I told you that it was subconscious and it doesn't necessarily make sense, what I said about darts. You don't need to be rude about darts, but...
I'm just saying that snooker is definitely more physical than darts, 100%.
Yeah, so what is the criteria this gives us? Well, so we say it is only a sport if...
It helps you get fit.
Well, then golf's off the case, then.
Golf does help you get fit.
Not if you're in a golf. Look at Donald Trump, mate.
Yeah, but he's, honestly, come on, he doesn't play golf. He just gets people to throw balls near the hole for him.
He would say he plays golf. I mean, if it gets you fit, it's a sport. So bowls is not a sport?
Yes, bowls is a sport. My dad plays bowls. And I promise you, the reason that people, when they're older, play bowls is because it's sedate. It's slow, and it's all they can manage, but they're still
I want to take up
100%
bowls.
Effort.
I want to take up bowls. Walking, I mean, does it cut both ways? Because walking is everything that gets you fitter a sport. Because Eleanor says walking is not a sport, but she's clearly never watched walking at the Olympics.
It definitely is a sport. Walking's in the Olympics.
I know, I know it is. So this would leave darts.
You might as well say that ice skating is not a sport. Of course it is.
So darts is the only... So I could have opened a can of worms here. Darts will end up being the only one that's not a sport because it doesn't get you fitter. And there's no evidence that being healthier and fitter makes you better at darts.
I think... No, it does. I think it does. If you look at the best players in the world, taking the Luke Littler out of it, most of them go out running. Most of them are having sports psychologists. It's all about from my point of view, it's the practice. It's not the playing. You
can play. It's expertise. It's expertise. No, not even expertise. It's a skill that's honed to close. It's the pursuit of perfection, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And that's why we love the 180s and the 147 so much, because that speaks to the pursuit of perfection so completely.
Do you know we're 9 days into the new year and we've already had four 147s this year?
I didn't know that. No, that is pretty special, isn't it?
That is very special, yeah. Very special.
Good luck. I'd like to know a little more about your journey off the streets back into home, but it's up to you whether we ever have that conversation. I have a little chat with Eleanor now, if because I know a lot of people listening will remember your call and will be interested to know how that happened and indeed what role this programme played in the process, but only if you're comfortable with it. 12:32 is the time. Tim Humphrey has your headlines.
More than 50,000 properties, mainly in southwest England, are without power following Storm Goretti. Wind gusts of 99 miles per hour were recorded at St Mary's Airport on the Isles of Scilly. Fresh snow and ice warnings have been issued for much of England and Scotland. The Russian Defence Ministry says it fired its hypersonic missile at a target in Ukraine during overnight strikes. Four people died in the attack that also saw hundreds of drones deployed. Social media firm X has switched off an image editing function for the vast majority of its users. It's after increasing pressure to stop people using the Grok AI tool to digitally make sexualized deep fakes. LBC weather, Storm Goretti slowly moving eastwards. Snow showers will linger across eastern areas of England. Sunny spells and wintry showers elsewhere, and a high of 8 degrees.
The new LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls?
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history?
No, no medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the biggest Furniture Village sale of the year. Save even more on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. But hurry, Early Bird offers end this Sunday at Furniture Village, a world-class family business.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:35 is the time. A New York gym owner suggests that golf is not exercise, and a big mouth on British radio suggests that snooker isn't a sport. I think that's probably been dealt with by Adrian. That was just a bit of a mental glitch of mine. Of course it's a sport. Do you know how darts was invented? You know, one of the biggest problems with this job is there's a little bit of my brain that thinks you've listened to every single show I've ever done. I wouldn't expect you to remember them. But, I mean, it's hard enough remembering sometimes that very few people listen to the whole show once. You know, you're zoning in and out of your attention zone. You've got other things to do. I'm in the background. The phone rings. You've got to go out. You don't like me. You're only tuning in by accident because you're here for Nick Ferrari, or you're getting in early for Sheila Fogarty. And yet somewhere in my brain, I presume you'll remember everything that's happened on the programme. And I told the story straight at the end of last year, which means it will have got a little bit further into the public consciousness. The idea that darts was invented when the Earl of Dartmouth had to postpone archery practice because of the weather and brought his troop of archers into his hall. And one of them made a miniature archery game in order to keep the lads entertained. And that's how darts was born, by servants of the Earl of Dartmouth. And I told it with a straight face at the end of last year, which means that it will have reached parts it hadn't previously reached. It's not true. I invented it. It's entirely my own invention. But it is such a successful invention that it has, on two occasions, been told, well, once to me and once to one of my daughters. I've been told by somebody else with a straight face how darts was invented, and it was a myth that I started live on this programme. We can't really get into the business of starting more myths, because then we'd lead ourselves open to accusations of fake news. But darts, what is a sport and why? What criteria would you use? 12:37 is the time. Richard is in Norwich. Did you know, Richard, in the 17th century, Norwich was the second largest city in England?
You said it with a straight face, James. It must be true.
Yeah, it is true. And you only read it yesterday. I did a double take and looked it up.
It's actually true.
Yeah. There was a story. Oh. Some nutcase was claiming that we didn't have immigration in the early Middle Ages. And so somebody else did a little bit of research into it. And they mentioned Norwich, the second largest city in England in 1600. About a third of the population had been born somewhere else.
Wow.
That you live and learn. Yeah. Anyway, why did you ring in?
The sports versus games thing. I think, and this is only what I think, if you have to change your shoes to do it, it's a sport.
So 10-pin bowling is a sport.
Exactly. 10-pin bowling is a sport. Controversially, snooker isn't, because you don't have to change your shoes.
Deepest
apologies to your last caller. Yeah, darts isn't, because you walk into a pub, if it's been snowing, you've got your boots on, you can have a game of darts, can't you? That's my theory.
I'm trying to think. I'm going to keep you on the line until I can think of a fly in the ointment of your theory. Something that you change your shoes for that is clearly not. What about swimming?
Well, you have to take your shoes off, don't you?
Well, you're just changing it now. You're as bad as Donald Trump. You're backtracking horribly now.
Yeah. Okay. Fair point. Well presented.
You do have to check. You have to adjust your footwear to do it. If you'd said
you
that,
then
could include swimming. Yeah. So darts is off. Snooker is off. You play football, but you do have to, supposed to have. Just because you can play it in any shoes doesn't mean you're not supposed to have. Yeah, I quite like that. I mean, it's not going to win, because golf. Would golf count as a sport then? Because you can. I know you're.
Golf shoes.
Yeah, I know.
But golf shoes, don't you?
Do you need to wear golf shoes when you're on the golf course? Well, no, can you not just wear normal trainers? Chess. Chess is
a sport. You could say the same about football, couldn't you? You could play football in your hobnail boots if you want to.
Of course you could.
Chess.
I'm putting chess. Yeah. Chess is a bit of a curveball, isn't it, actually? You don't need to change your shoes to play chess.
No.
But you'd say that was a game. Darts game, snooker game, chess game. What is in the Olympics that's a game, not a sport, at the moment?
Now you're asking.
About dressage. You need to wear boots. All right, well, I mean, to be honest, the more we think about it, the more powerful this criteria begins to look. Speaking of shoes, do you know why, every day's a school day, do you know why Justin Hood, who was kind of the breakthrough star at the darts this year, do you know why his nickname is Happy Feet?
No.
And his insignia is a penguin.
Big feet, maybe?
No, the opposite. So I think that he turned up for a game of darts, and there might actually be rules about footwear if you're playing competition darts. I think you might have to wear a certain type of shoe. And he didn't own any.
Change it into a sport then.
And so darts might become a sport. Someone else will know more about it than I do. But he didn't own the correct shoe, so he borrowed a pair of somebody with much bigger feet than him. As he approached the hockey, he could almost fold the shoe over the top of the curb.
Yeah.
So that's why he's known as Happy Feet, because he looked like a penguin during an early game of darts when he was walking around in a pair of shoes that were about four sizes too big for him. The other thing we love about Justin Hood is that he intends to use his £100,000 prize money that he picked up at Ali Pali to open a Chinese restaurant because he loves Chinese food. If that, come on. If that's not a sporting hero, I don't know what is. Thank you, Richard. Will's in Liverpool. Will, what would you like to say?
I feel I'm going to take this far too seriously.
No, you cannot take it too seriously, Will. That's the point, isn't it?
Good to speak to you. I haven't spoken for a number of years.
Good man.
Many years ago, I left school, did nothing, but I ended up doing a sports science degree.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
And it absolutely changed the way I view not only the world, but more importantly, sports.
Yes.
So, the argument that golf is not a sport, it's just absolute rubbish.
Well, it's not my argument. It's this fella in America.
No, I appreciate that.
Why is it absolute rubbish, though? You can't just say that. You've got to back it up.
I'm going to break it down for you now, and then we can move on to other sports.
Yes.
So, for example, to perform a golf shot, it's accumulation of multiple actions. So, when we talk in sports science of sports, to kick a ball is an action. To pick up a spoon on a coffee table is an action. Now, when you look at golf, there's multiple actions that come together to allow you to perform a single golf shot.
Yeah.
Particularly at elite level. The gentleman saying it doesn't improve health and fitness. Well, actually, I've been playing golf off and on most of my life. Unfortunately, my aspirations of being a pro got cut short because I ended up in a wheelchair at 13 years of age.
Gosh.
But what it allows you to do, it's your core strength, it's your health and well-being, and these are, it's weight transference, it's balance, it's visual perception, i.e. understanding a dynamic environment. So, let's talk about... So, to say that it's one of the most complex actions you can deliver to do correctly.
That's really interesting. What about, and darts would be the same, would it?
Darts is absolutely the same.
Yeah.
Darts is technically one of the hardest actions to perform. That goes back down to what's known as fine motor control. So a
fine motor control or spine motor control? Fine motor control.
You're having a go at my bendy back now.
I'm not. I promise you. I'm having a go at your accent, if anything. Fine with an F.
You're not the first there.
Fine with an F.
Fine motor control.
Yeah, sorry. I genuinely misheard you. Go on.
Yeah,
if I'd make a joke about you being in a wheelchair live on the radio, I'd be cancelled by tea time. Honestly.
Yeah.
Go on with it.
Fine motor control. So when we talk about fine motor control, he's the guy performing the action will have to control his breathing, control his heart rate, control his all this stuff that's going on in the body. What he's also got to be doing, and this is one theory I absolutely adore, is the homunculus. So a Russian theorist come up with the idea that within your brain, you've got a homunculus, which is a little fella with a load of levers, and he's doing all the calculations to allow you to, for example, pick up a pen that's on your desk.
Yeah.
When you pick up the pen that's on your desk, you're taking information into your brain, you're working out where you are in space, you're working out how much force has got to be used with the tips of your finger to pick up that pen, etc., etc., etc. So whatever the actions at elite level where they put the 10,000 hours of practice in, not just messing around, but practice, which is typically... So you could argue that a pianist could be a sport if it's put with codification. Now, this is the other thing that comes into sport. When is it a sport and when is it not a sport? It goes back to the codification of many of these games. Years ago, games were fun. You were joking about your staff for the darts, where that come from.
Yeah.
But actually, the Romans...
Somewhere along the line it got codified. What was essentially a scrum or a kickabout somebody started, like Marquess of Queensbury would be the perfect example.
Well, for example, the British codified most sports.
Yes.
That's just a fact.
Rule Britannia! Britannia rule the waves!
Let's not go there, please.
All right, fair enough.
But we codified sports. One of the... But most cultures played similar sort of games.
Yeah.
So, for example, The argument is we invented football. There was foot games, football games.
Of course, people were kicking
all
things
around the world.
Of course, there were.
Golf,
yeah.
Golf's the same. Many ancient civilizations used games and sports to train their armies. Where do you think a javelin throw come from? Archery. This was all war training many, many centuries or thousands of years ago. So the whole concept of what's a sport and what, you can go on forever and ever. It's fascinating.
People are going to think they've tuned into Radio 4 by accident and that they're listening to a documentary. You are brilliant.
Oh, cheers, mate.
Oh, you're welcome. That's absolutely fascinating. So there's a degree of randomness in it, as in, you know, gone down. Well, musical instruments are really interesting. You don't think, because you have competitions as well. Actually, almost all of the criteria of sport would apply to the Young Musician of the Year competition.
Look, dancing Jenga, when you've had a few drinks and you're all playing with your mates trying to pull it up. That can be, if you put the right codes, the right structure, and the right so you benchmark, it can be a sport.
It isn't, because some people are just natural talent. So what, can you do it in a sentence? Because I was thinking repetition in pursuit of perfection, but that doesn't quite work. Because
I think sport is it's about the codification.
Yeah.
We do many actions. You know, there's not much. We do actions all the time.
You could have competitive housework almost, couldn't you? Or so anything could be a sport.
You've got extreme ironing now. I don't know if you've been aware of that, but you've got extreme ironing.
I have
that
heard
can
of
be
that.
Deemed a sport.
Yeah, because it is. Because it's codified. Someone has gone to the trouble of introducing a set of rules. And under the parameters, within the parameters of which you pursue perfection, and at that point it becomes a sport. So chess. What about chess?
Well, for me, it's a sport.
Why?
Because it's cognitive processing, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's no actions. You can play it on a screen, you can play it on a board. I mean, chess.
But there's structure, there's codification, there's cognitive processing. Now, and the other thing with chess, some of the things we've referenced in sports science is open environments and closed, or dynamic environments, closed environments. So golf, for example, is a pretty closed environment in that you're not playing against, you're playing against a course, not an individual.
Yeah.
Whereas tennis, you're playing against an individual, not a court. Likewise, so the same can apply. You play. You're playing against an.
I'm really late. I could do this all day. I could. I mean, because I now want to ask you about Monopoly, and I think you'd be able to answer it as well. Lots of people believe that story about darts, by the way, including the producer of this programme. But Dave in Bexley Heath spent most of Christmas telling people that the Duke of Dartmouth, in his case, not the Earl of Dartmouth, had invented darts when it was too wet and rainy outside for his bowmen to practice. So we're all in on this. You can all, it's not just me. You can now, you're part of the joke, you're part of the secret. But Will in Liverpool there, it was practically a TED talk, that. I'm still not able to completely nail down. Oh, go on then, quickly, in a sentence, Monopoly. Is it a sport? There you go. He's five. Oh, got you. Bamboozled, I think. 12:49.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
A citizen killed by agents in broad daylight, threats to Latin American nations and a European one. Is America now a fascist country? And Elon Musk says if you pay, you can abuse anyone sexually.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day, and messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled out my name in tea lights, and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings, next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:52 is the time. I don't know if we're going to have any more room for callers. An awful lot of people making the same joke, but Dave was the one I saw. David, suggesting that chess was invented by the Earl of Chester, and a lot of people commenting on the similarity in sound between our last caller and the great John Bishop. Speaking of brilliant people, I think he's gone now, so I can tell you. This kind of radio, where it's... We began at 12 o'clock with a bit of about my mug. This weird whimsy that I hope you enjoy. I need to do it sometimes, and I love doing it when we do. I was introduced to it as a concept on the radio because I previously only ever listened to news radio growing up, or music. I never really listened to personalities between songs having big personalities. Steve Wright, I suppose, but that was so tightly... Anyway, it was Jonathan Ross on Radio 2 who just made me realise. Mrs O'Brien and I used to sometimes plan our journeys on Saturday mornings because the 3 hours we were in the car would go so much quicker if he was on the radio. And in the middle of that conversation, he walked past. He walked past the window of the studio because he does a show on Classic FM and he does a podcast here at Global as well. I just love it when stuff like that happens. I thought I'd share it with you. I'm going to do this first just so that we definitely have enough time for it, okay? And it may be that we've got time for a call or two at the end of it. But the point is this. Donald Trump, as Simon Marks was telling us earlier, has told the New York Times that he doesn't believe in international law. And that the only thing that he will go by when deciding that something is right or wrong is his morality. So I thought it might be timely today, as we end our week together, to have a little look at what we know about Donald Trump's morality and what it might mean for the United States of America and, of course, the wider world. So what is the morality that Donald Trump will rely upon in preference to... laws, decency, what was it, the bonds of obligation that bind us all? Well, here is one of the most obvious examples.
I got to use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. But I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the... I can do anything.
Nothing to worry about there, outside of his personal life and into his political, of course. This example of Donald Trump's morality remains very relevant.
This is a major fraud in our nation. We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list, okay?
I mean, we're only two calls in and we've already got self-confessed sexual offences, election fraud and lying. How much worse can it get?
So, look,
All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
That's him trying to get Georgia's Secretary of State to commit election fraud. That was in January of 2021 that got leaked. Back to his personal life. This is pretty grim, but hey-ho. He's in charge.
I don't think Ivanka would do that inside the magazine, although she does have a very nice figure. I've said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her. You know?
Stop it!
It's the laughter, isn't it? It's a bit like The Hunger Games or some sort of dystopia where the hideous central characters, whether it's Coriolanus Snow or someone else, is surrounded by sycophants who, a bit like what's happening with Musk at the moment, actually, I suppose. Anyway, this is Trump, whose morality is what will be replacing international law as the guide by which the free world is run. This probably needs a little bit of context, and it works better if you can see it, but this is when he decided to mock the New York Times reporter Serge Kovalevsky, who suffers from a very chronic condition. This was right at the beginning of the first campaign, the first attempt to become president.
Written by a nice reporter. Now the poor guy, you got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. I don't remember. He's going like, I don't remember. Maybe that's what I said. This is 14 years ago. They didn't do a retraction.
Interesting how much more alive he sounds, more vital that he sounds. Just 10 years ago, he sounds nothing like that now. We talked a lot about Joe Biden slowing down. Donald Trump, I hadn't really clocked how much he's slowed down in the 10 years since he was publicly mocking the disabilities of a New York Times reporter. And then finally, a little bit of context here, because of course it is Donald Trump's morality that will now be guiding the world, no longer international law about which he has expressed his contempt, or indeed domestic law, which you've seen his contempt for in the aftermath of Renee Nicole Good's killing in Minneapolis. Here he is, essentially endorsing bribery and criticizing the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which makes bribing foreign entities illegal. So imagine you're answering a question of, what do you think about the idea of making it illegal to bribe foreign businesses or politicians or individuals or indeed any kind of entity at all?
Every other country in the world is doing it. We're not allowed to. So it puts us at a huge disadvantage, mm-hmm. And let them clean up their own act.
So in terms of what Donald Trump's morality currently consists of, there's self-confessed sex offending, lying, election fraud, encouraging other people to commit election fraud, sexualizing your own daughter, mocking the disabled, and passionately pursuing the right to bribe individuals, entities and businesses. There's nothing to worry about there. And indeed, if you're worried about any of those things, please don't forget that just simply means that you suffer from Trump derangement syndrome. If you missed any of today's show, I'm off to play darts. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, the newish LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. So do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sawbrick will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you, James. We've heard a lot about Grok and the abuse, misuse of images this week. Going to talk about it in more detail at 3. Elon Musk has said, if you pay to use X, you can use any image this is the upshot of what he's saying, to use any image to abuse anyone sexually on X using their image. What are we going to do about that? It looks like a reprieve for pubs, but is it enough? And what about other parts of the small business economy? Bake Off winner and pub owner Candice Brown joins me at 2. But first to the States and the F question, fascism. Is America now or about to become a fascist country? It's been a dizzying week of awful events, both in and from America, or certainly contested events.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The leader of Cornwall Council has told us it could take a few days to get back to normal after Storm Goretti. Thousands of homes are without power after winds of close to 100 miles per hour overnight. Snow and ice has caused disruption in Wales and central England, with fresh warnings in place for today and over the weekend. Hundreds of schools are closed. Meanwhile, a woman who fell in deep snow in Aberdeenshire has told LBC three Network Rail engineers who came to her rescue are heroes. Joanne Reed was walking her dogs in a field near Inch Station when she found she couldn't get up.
I saw an orange jacket through the field, so I knew there was the railway men were here. So I kept shouting and shouting, and there was three of them. And then one person said, "I'm hearing something, but I can't see." So I kept shouting and shouting, and then one appeared, and it was like, oh, thank goodness.
Officials in Kyiv say at least four people have been killed and 22 injured in a Russian airstrike overnight. Moscow says it was revenge for an attack on one of Vladimir Putin's residences. Ukraine says no such attack happened. Iran's supreme leader says there are some rioters in the country who want to please the US president by damaging public properties. Protesters have again been out on the streets in demonstrations sparked by a struggling economy. The government has cut off the internet and international telephone calls. Journalist Tara Kangalu says it's a very serious situation.
Government buildings have been burned, not just one, but across the country, as well as flags and I saw police cars in the city of Yazd.
Image editing on X's Grok AI tool has now been limited to paid subscribers only. It follows reports some users are prompting the chatbot to create sexualized deepfake content of women and children. The change means that those using the function will have their name and payment information on file. US officials say troops are in the process of seizing another oil tanker in the Caribbean. Yesterday, two vessels with links to Venezuela were boarded, one in the Mediterranean, the other in the North Atlantic. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 53 points at 10,098. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. And the LBC weather, Storm Goretti is slowly moving eastwards. Some snow showers will linger across eastern areas of England. Sunny spells and wintry showers elsewhere. And a high of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
At Tesco, we know that beans
means Heinz.
And you love to ask.
Have you had yours?
All of you.
Love it.
Hate it.
And because...
I'm worth it.
We're keeping prices low on brands you love, like 150 grams of Heinz beans, 12-pack of Weetabix, 250 grams of Marmite, or 700 millilitres of L'Oreal Elvive Colour Protect Shampoo. Look out for the Everyday Low Prices logo in-store and online. Tesco. Every little helps. Everyday low prices includes thousands of products across the majority of larger stores and online. Selected branded products only.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We're keeping a close eye on the impact the weather is having on in certain parts of the UK. We'll reflect on that a bit later. But I want to start with just, in a sense, taking stock of the week in America and about America, because some of the actions taken by Donald Trump this week have not, or that have happened this week, have not just been beyond the shores, have they, of America, not least that killing in Minneapolis 2 days ago. And the accusation that Donald Trump is a fascist, building a fascist government, fascist administration, didn't begin last weekend either. But I think it's fair to say, isn't it, that the actions in Venezuela, the claims to Greenland and the threatened action over Greenland and Colombia and Cuba and now Mexico does start to make you sort of sit up and really have a think about what it is Donald Trump is trying to build specifically in America. I would fall short of saying he is a fascist or it is a fascist government by this stage on a number of fronts, not least the Supreme Court has already successfully pushed back against, for example, the movement of federal troops into certain states. Not all, but some. They're going to rule next week, I think it is, on his actions or some of his actions and policies on tariffs. And if they push back hard against him on that, that will be a blow for him in a domestic scenario where he's already struggling on any number of fronts, which perhaps might explain some of the actions abroad. Who knows? when the New York mayor of when the new mayor of New York City, Zohra Mamdani, met Donald Trump at the end of last year, you might remember the meeting in the Oval Office that was far chummier than people expected. He was asked about his comments calling Trump a fascist.
He asked about your comment calling the president a fascist, and your answer was, both President Trump and I have been clear about our positions and our views. Mm-hmm. Are you affirming that you think President Trump is a fascist?
I've spoken about...
That's okay, you can just say yes. Okay. Yeah. It's easier. It's easier than explaining it. I don't mind.
It's easier than explaining it. I don't mind. Well, somebody who's given a great deal of thought to whether Trump and Trump's administration is and are fascist is Simon Cooper, a columnist for the Financial Times, who's written a piece in today's FT titled Defining Donald Trump. You've given a lot more thought to this than people who perhaps just bandy the word about all too readily. You conclude that he isn't, don't you?
I mean, first of all, he's a dangerous authoritarianism. So whether you say he's a fascist or not, that doesn't minimize him in any way. He's very dangerous, but we have to understand what he is. And I say, look, a lot of the things he does are kind of textbook fascist. And I used Umberto Eco's famous checklist of fascism from 30 years ago. And Eco says a fascist says there's this threat from intruders, often foreigners, and I, the dictator, represent the people, and everyone who disagrees with me is treasonous and should be punished. And there are conspiracies against us, and I speak in, the leader speaks in very simple language to prevent any complex thought. So all that is very Trumpian. And in those senses, in his methods, he looks a lot like a fascist, yes. What I argue in the article, and I was kind of led by this new German collection, writings by historians comparing the 1930s to today, a very big difference, core difference between Trump and Hitler, because we are in the world where we're drawing that comparison now, understandably, you know, based also on what you said in your intro. Mm. But a big difference between Trump and Hitler is that Hitler thought the ultimate thing that a people can do, the highest human purpose, is to unite for war and to fight a bloody war in which, you know, the people proves itself as supreme. And to do that, you need a strong bureaucratic state. So that was Hitler. Trump thinks the highest human purpose is self-enrichment of yourself and your family. He thinks everyone wants that. It's totally natural. It's also why he doesn't hide his family's self-enrichment from his presidency, because he thinks, look, it's natural. It's what everyone would do. It's what we're all here for. And Trump thinks that war in which you could die is stupid. So fascists always have a cult of death. You know, they, like Putin now, cults of the Russian soldiers and Russian people killed in World War II. That's classic fascism. You know, these marches with flares. Trump doesn't do that. He thinks that people who die in war are stupid. They're suckers. They're losers, he said. He thinks you should be out there trying to make money for yourself. And the wars he's seeking are ones where there's no opposition. It's rollovers, like Venezuela. You go in, you take the president, no
Greenland.
Americans killed.
Yeah.
Greenland, it would be really easy to take. That's what he wants. He doesn't want to lose any soldiers.
So let's talk for a minute as well about, for example, the Supreme Court I mentioned. There are still some important parts of the US system that can still push against him